Hermione Premier, who's the director, the investigating director, is on her way here. She's had some access issues.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Mthethwa Mhlapu. I'm from the Integrated Justice System Program at Department of Justice.
Can I request that you use the mic? I think members would like to know you.
It's not operational. Is it better? Okay. As I said, my name is Mthethwa Mhlapu. My name is Mthethwa Mhlapu.
The one they thought we'll use the other one.
Good morning, Chair and colleagues. My name is Mthethwa Mhlapu. I'm from the Department of Justice in the Integrated Justice System Program.
Thank you for that. I think everybody in this room has introduced themselves, if I'm not mistaken. But once again, Deputy Minister and your team, a hearty welcome to this briefing. I just wanted to also just go through the documentation because I want to ensure that honourable members have all the documentation that is required. You would have received emails prior to today's meeting, but today you would have received this package which consists of a number of documents, including our research analysis, the APP, as well as the presentations by the Department of Justice are contained in the package. I think over and above that, you'd also be able to see the presentation up there, if there is a presentation to be made. Honourable Deputy Minister, in terms of your briefing to the committee, we had identified issues in terms of the State of the Nation address as well as the NDP for you to also focus on, in as much as you're going to give us an overview of the APP and budget. We would appreciate it to some extent if there's a provincial focus as well. I know in terms of your presentation you have done some regional allocations, but I'm sure in terms of our engagement, if there are specific issues related to provinces, we would obviously raise them. I think you also must guide us in terms of your presentation and how you want to run it. My understanding is that we'll also get a presentation from the NPA as well as the SLU. I don't know, it doesn't look like legal aid as yet, but be that as it may, I think this is our first engagement and possibly not the last over the next 5 years. So, we will obviously engage with them at that point. Maybe just one more thing, just to say that in future, I know as we engage, we would obviously give you sufficient time and give ourselves sufficient time to engage on these matters. However, given the tight schedule of Parliament at the moment to pass the budgets, we actually press for time. In future, I know we will also engage the NPA, the SIU, and Legal Aid FA in separate sessions. But bear with us today. I think, Deputy Minister, if I can hand over to you, and you run the process and decide who would present when. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, Chair, and good morning, everybody. And thanks for the opportunity.
I think we've just forgotten to indicate to the committee that the minister did send an apology in terms of attendance to this meeting. You're going to do it after that.
I'm just going to address that. It was the minister that was invited, and I wish to convey his good wishes. He's unfortunately had to tender his apology because he's attending Cabinet, which is sitting as we speak. We've got 3 hours. The National Assembly, I think, that's 3 hours to do what the National Assembly did in 2 days. So it's all going to be a little bit compressed. But we'll do the best we can. On behalf of the Ministry and the entire portfolio comprising various departments and several entities, I wish to assure you, Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Select Committee, of our fullest cooperation and commitment towards the work placed under the auspices of this committee. We look forward to a continuous period of constructive engagements with your committee as we execute our plans based on the priorities of government, whilst you exercise your oversight responsibility to ensure full accountability to the people of our country. The committee has requested that we focus on very specific issues in our presentation, and I'll deal with these shortly. But in order to fully brief members, we have also made available copies of the Minister's political overview that was delivered to the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Correctional Services last week. I'm told if it's not here yet, it would be coming. I think there was a slight problem with the final version. We do also have a presentation that Ms. Mpahlele Ntsane will be doing on the APP. She's promised that would be brief, 15 minutes. I will then be dealing mainly with the questions, and then obviously there would be inputs from the NDPP and the head of the SIU. But let me briefly reflect on a few priority areas which the Minister alluded to in his overview to the National Assembly Portfolio Committee, which are equally relevant to the work of this committee. And these are, firstly, that the process that is underway to develop a new medium-term strategic framework. This will infuse the priorities that were identified by South Africans during the robust election period that we've emerged from. These priorities have been succinctly and unambiguously outlined by the President in his recent State of the Nation address. Secondly, the Department's annual performance plan for the current financial year, and that's 1920, and that of the entities supporting the Ministry of Justice and Correctional Services, which lay a foundation as we begin our journey over the next 5 years. Thirdly, the modernization of the criminal and civil justice systems and the courts. The modernization and digitization of our work will reduce the need for more space and its attendant cost of employing more staff to manage manual processes and paper. Fourthly, the strengthening of the fight against corruption. Fifthly, the acceleration of the transformation of the Office of the State Attorney and the legal profession. And lastly, the expeditious enactment of key legislation that requires this committee's urgent attention. We will also share with this committee our legislative program for the year once the Minister has approved it. The above-mentioned priorities incorporate most of the specific points which we are requested to focus on for the purposes of today's presentation, and I'll move on to those specific points. The first was an update on the integrated on the criminal justice system. The seven-point plan approved by Cabinet in 2008 consists in the main of broad objectives that inform and guide the review of the criminal justice system from its apartheid design into the new democratic dispensation after 1994. These have been incorporated into the National Development Plan Vision 2030. In his State of the Nation address, the President recently emphasized the centrality of the National Development Plan as our roadmap to build the South Africa we all want to see and imagine. Key to this cluster is the need to achieve the vision of building safer communities. Part of the seven-point plan, which has received a lot of focus, relates to the integrated justice system and modernization programs and the criminal justice system revamp initiatives. The integrated justice system program forms part of the broader CJS revamp or review and focuses on the creation of the information communications technology platform across the criminal justice value chain. It's also an area where the state has invested extensively. The Department can, at a later stage, also share with the committee the details of the various projects under the IJS and the anticipated value addition. It's been our view with the former minister that there's a need to evaluate the efficiency of the transversal IT platform in particular to guard against the danger of automating old processes and inefficiencies within the system. Cabinet has in 2017 approved an integrated criminal justice strategy as a high-level framework that straddles across all the JCPS departments and which is aimed at accelerating achievement of the goals under each of the changes contemplated under the seven-point plan. Work continues against each of the various seven-point plan changes, and the department may shed more light on this as the detailed strategy will be going to Cabinet in this financial year. The measures and implementation steps include the following main focus areas. Firstly, overhauling the Criminal Procedure Act in a phased manner with focus areas such as bail, reform of the arrest dispensation, and expungement of criminal records. Secondly, ensuring that the criminal justice system becomes a victim-friendly system. Thirdly, improving public confidence and trust through partnerships and improving efficiency aspects. Fourthly, building a corruption-resilient criminal justice system. Fifthly, dealing with domestic stability and issues of illegal foreign nationals. Six, balancing resource planning across the criminal justice system value chain and joint budgeting to budget planning. And lastly, linked and integrated information management systems and data analysis across the value chain from incident to trial to sentencing to post-sentencing aspects. The second point we were asked to give an input on was progress in giving effect to the National Development Plan recommendations to review the mandate and functions of the anti-corruption agencies. The Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster is currently finalizing a national anti-corruption strategy that will be tabled before Cabinet shortly. Rebuilding the National Anti-Corruption Forum is work in progress, with discussions with the relevant role players underway. Part of the work regarding anti-corruption includes revisiting the functions of the Anti-Corruption Task Team and interaction with the new investigating directorate of the National Prosecuting Authority. The various law enforcement and anti-corruption agencies already in existence and backed by strong anti-corruption legislation puts us in good stead to rid the country of corruption. The immediate task of these multi-anti-corruption agencies is to bring to book those who are implicated in the proceedings before the commissions of inquiry into allegations of state capture and impropriety at the South African Revenue Service and the Public Investment Corporation. Not only will the perpetrators of these deeds face the full might of the law, but all their illicit gains will be pursued for recovery up to the last cent. The recommendations of the SARS Commission of Inquiry have been implemented, and the PIC Commission is expected to finalize its report by the end of July this month. Then, just on the update on the investigative directorate, I think I'll leave that to the NDPP. And there's a point on strengthening the work of the Special Investigation Unit, which I'll also leave to Advocate Motibe. And there's a question on strengthening the capacity of the NPA. I think if that would also be for the NDPP, which brings me then to progress on the review of the Magistrates Court Act, which was the next question that you had. I've already alluded to the fact that the Minister will furnish this committee with the Department's legislative program, which will include the bill that will repeal the old Magistrates Act of 1944 and other legislation on magistrates and will enact new legislation in their place. There have been continuous engagements with the lower court judiciary on some of the policy choices that must be incorporated into these proposed bills. Part of the legislative changes will seek to expedite disciplinary processes and steps taken in respect of magistrates. Misconduct proceedings are currently provided for in Section 13 of the Magistrates Act of 1993 and Regulations 25 and 26 of the Regulation for Judicial Officers in the Lower Courts.
Deputy Minister, yep. Sorry to interrupt, but do you have a document that you...
I think this can be given out, but I don't think copies have been made as yet.
Is it? Okay. It would just allow members to follow...
Oh, you've got it. They've got it already.
No, okay.
All right.
That's the minister.
That's the minister's one. The one that you...
What I'm reading now.
Yes.
We can circulate that later.
Okay. I got one now, but I'm just worried about my members.
So we can circulate that, but yeah. Anyway, where I was on the Magistrates Act, which requires both Houses of Parliament to pass separate resolutions for the removal or non-removal from office of magistrates. This can be problematic if the two Houses don't concur. The view is held that there's no justification for a superior requirement or higher standard for the removal from office of magistrates than that which is required for judges of the superior courts. And with judges, it's only the National Assembly that confirms the removal. So that's something we would be looking at. I mean, the committee can make input on it as to whether they should continue to play a role, but if they don't for judges, why should they for magistrates? Then on the National Action Plan to Combat Racism, Racial Discrimination, Xenophobia and Related Intolerances, this is an important tool to prevent and combat racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, and other discriminatory conduct and forms of prejudice that we've been experiencing in our country recently. The National Action Plan was approved by Cabinet in February this year, and it's been deposited with the United Nations and will be revised every 5 years. Just by way of background, this emerged out of as one of the country commitments from the World Conference Against Racism held some time back in Durban, and other countries have also been depositing national action plans. The national plan includes a targeted set of actions, interventions, measures, and timeframes with a proposed governance structure for the implementation of the national action plan, as well as clear monitoring and evaluation arrangements and a reporting framework. Since the NAP was approved in February, we can now commence with setting up these measures and structures. Cabinet's approval of the National Action Plan followed a rigorous process, which was overseen by a steering committee of different stakeholders, including government departments, Chapter 9 institutions, broader civil society organizations, and other relevant role players. Input from the public was also important in shaping the National Action Plan. As I've said, it's a five-year plan, a five-year indicative implementation plan covering the periods 2020 to 2023-24. The implementation plan will be aligned to government's medium-term strategic framework. The first year of the implementation plan, that's this year, entails intensive planning, including budgeting and costing of measures with stakeholders and broader consultation. It will also be the setup phase of the governance structure for the National Action Plan. Furthermore, it's envisaged that an integrated government strategy on public education pertaining to anti-discrimination will be developed in line with the National Action Plan. The terms of reference for a government structure for the implementation of the National Action Plan will be approved, and a policy framework for the regulation and recognition of community-based advisory office sector and community-based paralegals in South Africa will be finalized by the 31st of March next year. Then the next point, the last
point of order, Madam Speaker. Madam Chair, I don't really get what this man is. Because I don't have any document when I'm trying to follow him. I've told him next. I'm asking to get the paper or the document because I'm serious myself here.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Matanai. I think Deputy Minister, you're about to finish, right?
One more point,
yeah.
Chair.
No.
I was given letter. There was a letter sent to the minister with questions that you wanted responses to. One of those was on the National Action Plan, which I've just covered.
Let me address. I agree with you, Honourable Matanai. The document is the one that we were trying to make copies of, and we. We hope to get those documents.
I don't follow what you say.
Yes. No. Every minister, give me a moment, please. Oh, that's nice. We are getting copies of the documents. But in addition to that, we're also going to get
a copy.
Yes. We're also going to get a presentation on the APPN budget.
Yeah, it was a problem because they were hiding. He keep on talking, but he's hiding the paper.
But we will also give you time to get familiar with the information. I think as the presentation on the APP has been made, it will also become more clear. Okay, thank you. Deputy Minister, you can finish with the final point, and then we can go into the. Maybe we should go into the APP. And budget, and then we can get other responses.
Well, it's a bit strange because you gave a letter to the minister wanting specific points addressed, which is what I was doing. I was reading from a presentation, yes, but does that mean that honourable members cannot listen? When the minister gave his presentation to the portfolio committee, the copy of the speech was not distributed, and nobody raised what the honourable Motsumai is raising now that they couldn't follow. So. you know, the difficulty is you ask for a response on particular questions, which is what I was giving. Okay? If I'm not sure where that came from, but if members don't know what those issues are, what the national plan is, well, then it does become a little bit more difficult. The last point is an update on the rollout of the socio-economic justice program, which is what you asked for. But if members don't know what that is...
Deputy Minister, yeah. You're not being helpful. I think you can finish with your presentation. We do have copies. Other copies are coming. Finish with it and then take us through the APP and then we'll finalize the matter.
Yes, but Chair, the issue I'm raising is it should not be necessary to hand a written response. This is a verbal presentation.
Okay.
And that is what I'm actually objecting to.
Okay. It's noted. Honourable Dole?
No, I was saying, Chair, to assist the meeting, we must allow the Deputy Minister to finish. He's indicated that he's about to finish, and as soon as that is done, we'll then go to the APP.
All right. The last point was an update on the rollout of the Socio-Economic Justice Program, or SEJA. The main objective of this program is to facilitate the realization of socio-economic rights for vulnerable and marginalized groups, the strengthening of civil society organizations, and to build sector coordination in the social justice sector. These programs are aligned to the objectives of the National Development Plan, including its medium-term strategic framework to create a capable state fostering social cohesion. The SEJA program is implemented by the Foundation for Human Rights through a memorandum of agreement signed between the Department of Justice and the Foundation for Human Rights. Now, the SEJA program has six key resultant areas, which includes awareness of constitutional rights and enhanced participatory democracy. We're pleased to advise that the SEJA program has met or exceeded all its targets on the 2018-19 performance indicators, with 3.8 million people reached by multimedia campaigns to raise awareness and knowledge of the Constitution. That's nearly double the set target of 2 million. In addition, programs were implemented to sustain increased awareness and knowledge of constitutional rights. Grants have been awarded to civil society organizations working in the human rights sector to promote awareness and access to socio-economic rights amongst vulnerable and marginalized groups, and research programs were conducted on the implementation of socio-economic rights. Policy dialogues were also held to promote participatory democracy with stakeholders in the justice and human rights sector. So that's on the socio-economic justice program. I hope members were able to follow it. The department will here today, in their respective presentations and deliberations with the committee, be able to amplify the general overview that I've highlighted. I think let me leave it at that. So if Ms. Lebo, Pashele and Nsane can then do the brief presentation on the annual performance plan.
Thank
you, Rose Chen. Chair, not all of us, we do have the document as members of Parliament. The Honourable next to me hasn't got a single document. Can we please be helped by officials and allow the member to have all documentation? Thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. We'll get the package there.
I've got the PowerPoint presentation. The members have the PowerPoint presentation.
You may continue.
Thanks, Chair and members. I'm going to take you through a summarized version. I'm not going to go through all the slides, and as has already been indicated, I will go through only the areas that are of interest to the provincial legislature. And just to warn the members as well, some of the performance that we are going to discuss here is still being audited. So we will come back at the end of the financial year or in October sometime to present the annual report of the department. But for the sake of context, we will then give members a sense of what it is that we're talking about when we're talking about numbers and implementations, etc. So, Chair, I'll focus on Councillor Chu, program 1, 2, 3, and 5, and only those areas then that are of interest. The vision of the department for new members is justice for all in South Africa, and the mission is to administer an efficient and a responsive justice system. The values are on the board: commitment to constitutional values and a culture of human rights, rule of law, excellence, responsiveness, accountability, and good governance. Now, the four strategic goals of the department are on the board or on your documents. The first one, aligned with proper administration, it says we want to optimize the deployment of people, processes, technology to meet safe delivery and good governance requirements. The second one, people-centered justice services that are accessible, reliable, and efficient. That talks about our support for courts and related activities. The third one, corporatized, cost-effective, and integrated quality legal services to proactively protect the best interests of the state, mostly around state legal services, legal advice, etc., that we give to the state. And lastly, it's about constitutionalism, human rights, and commitment. Our work is focused on transformational themes, and we've identified four transformational themes: transformation of the legal profession and mechanism of access to justice, transformation of state legal services, transformation of criminal justice system, and entity oversight. Now, these are on the transformational side, but there's also sustained agenda that is legislated that we need to perform on. Now, going straight into the programs, I'm not going to touch on program one. It's not of much interest then to this house. And I'm going then to program number two, which starts on slide number 15. Our objective under the third theme of transformation of criminal justice system and restoring public confidence is about integrating the criminal justice system for efficiency. And how do we measure that we are efficient in our criminal side of things? Is we want to ensure that the number of cases in the criminal backlog is reducing throughout our courts. And our target is 48,000 for the year, and we estimate that in the 2018-19 we're sitting at 49. You will notice that in 2017-18 we're talking about 33,000. The increase is not necessarily due to the increase in the backlog cases. We have found that in the earlier years, our level of capturing of cases on our ICMS was not where it's supposed to be. So the more we capture, then the more this number gets closer to the truth, and we are confident that we are doing much better on the capturing side, and that number is much closer to the truth. What we do then as a department is to ensure that cases go fast. One of the issues that we do is we ensure that we implement sexual offences courts, and I'll give you a list of those. CCTV cameras must work so that cases that involve particularly children are done, and then all the issues around the National Register of Sexual Offences must be completed. But just to give you a sense of the CCTV cameras that we're talking about, that have been rolled out. They are on the board. In Gauteng, we've rolled out four. I don't know if you can see it, but I don't think you have this information, Chair. We will ensure that you get it as soon as possible. But in order for us to ensure that this has a provincial plant, I thought, let me just put this thing on. So in Gauteng, we're talking about Bronco Space, the booking, three courtrooms, in KZN, Ingwang Vuma, Pietermaritzburg, and another one in Pietermaritzburg, Northwest, of Kenihuru, Simadikwe, Swastrafens, and Fenderstop. But we will give you a complete list. These are the ones that we've done just in the last financial year. We have a list that we plan to do also in the new financial year. And then on the issue of number of courts adapted in line with sexual offences courts, you will see on the next slide that the ones that we have done in the current year are listed there. Like I already said, this work is still under audit, so when we come back, the list might look slightly different, but this is more or less what we're talking about adaptation of this court. The sexual offences court enables particularly children to be able to give evidence in criminal courts. They have to give evidence not in the main court sitting. They must give evidence outside of the court, in the court building, but in a separate room with the assistance of NGOs, etc. And then to move on, this is of no interest to our members here. I can be guided. Let me then do objective four. I think there's a sense that I must touch on objective four. The fourth objective talks about this one we've done. I think four we've already. Okay, the.
Matt, can I suggest that you don't skip anything?
All right.
Yes, you skip program one. Okay.
All right.
But as you continue, so that you don't decide for members.
Okay.
Present on what template. Thank you.
All right. No, that's fine. The other work that we do is in ensuring that criminal cases move fast. We as a department, I already indicated that the number of cases on the backlog is about, it's not just us that would be implicated in the delays. There are all other delays in the criminal process. But we then monitor the delays that we are responsible for. And under 4.1, we're talking about delays due to court administration staff. And it shows that of the 148,953 cases that were delayed, let me deal with estimated for 2018-19, of the 180,000 or so cases that are open and have been delayed in the court as we speak, about 443 of them are due to court administration staff, and it's only about 0.3%. Now, when it comes to child justice, we ensure that we meet our performance standards and ensure that preliminary inquiries for child justice are done on time. It's one area where we were not doing well, where the children were not going through the process correctly, and we set up an indicator for ourselves that at least 85% of those must be done within 90 days. I already mentioned the issue of capturing unreturned cases under 4.3 are those that appeared in court but were not updated on our ICMS. ICMS is Integrated Case Management System. It's a system that we use to capture all our cases and progress thereof. At the beginning of the financial year in 2018-19, we had around 18,000 cases that were not captured. But by the end of the financial year, we're sitting at 4,000, so we are making fairly good progress. And at the end of next year, we really want to have this thing down to zero. It might not be completely down to zero because there's power cuts, there's a few issues here and there, but there's a performance standard that we have signed up, and we really want to get very close to zero as possible. Then under 4.4, we ensure the foreign language interpreters is one major cost driver for the department because we are saying in our policies as a department or as part of our constitution that people must be heard in court in a language that they understand. And as a result of that, we tend to have a lot of money spent on foreign language interpreters, but we want to get it more efficient. We want to ensure that a foreign language interpreter in one area, they must be concentrated per area so that we don't have a foreign language interpreter going to Polokwane when there's a court case in Gauteng, as an example. So we really need to ensure that we put a case together, or we need to cluster them efficiently so that courts run and that we also decrease the amount of money that we spend. On slide number 19, we talk about family law services. Our intention under family law services is that all cases, all children whose families are in distress, we really want to assist as many as possible. And our objective is to get to 25,000 in 2019-20. So each and every year we want to increase the number of children that we can see. That's on slide number 19. But if you check on slide number 20, then the detail of how are we going to do that. Litigation matters that must be heard in court, we want to ensure that those reports are finalized within 12 months. Non-litigation matters, we want those to be finalized within 6 months. And where we need to file reports in court, they must be filed within 6 months. And we also want to make sure that the backlog matters, because for litigation matters, there's a whole lot of backlog that stretch for years. And of those, we think at least each and every year, as we do that 12-month, 6-month turnaround time, the family advocates must also pull cases that are under backlog and ensure that we at least address 2,000 of those every year. Then under 6.4, we talk about maintenance. We had a maintenance standard of completion of the maintenance process until the number of days that it takes to do a proper service of process as 90 days. Our target is to get it to 72%. We are estimating 82% at the moment, but due to financial constraints, we might not get to 72%, one. And secondly, that standard was only in 99 courts. Now that new standard is going to be spread out to all the courts. So the 90-day standard for proper service of process is now going to be spread throughout the country. But in the current year, there were about 63,000 cases in the 99 courts, and 82% of them we achieved. On slide number 21, our objective on increasing access, increasing access is not only physical access, it's just access to services in general. And we can only gauge that we are increasing access for people by asking them. And that is why we intend to run perception surveys every year to say, are we really increasing access in whatever way, whether it's easier, it's quicker, it's online, where appropriate, etc. So we intend to continue to run those surveys. But as for the physical access that we have signed up to finalize on slide 22, we're talking about new court buildings that we intend to finish. These are courts that have already been started. It's not easy to finish a court. There's contractual issues, there's legal issues, but from our side, we put them on the APP so that we can push and push as far as possible. So that's under 7.1. And then under 7.2, there's major upgrades of courts where you need to either, there's major works that must happen, upgrades, etc., and we have signed them up. We have a three-year program that runs across, and they are indicated on the board. When it comes to civil side, the objective of the department is really to work towards mediating civil cases first before trying to go through trials. And in order for us to do that as a department, is we must roll out courts that can offer a civil court annex mediation services. And also not only do that, but ensure that we make it, we ask people, we refer people to mediation first. So when people come and they want to litigate, we must first refer them to mediation. So we have a performance standard against that. And in the current, or in the year that has just passed, we have proclaimed new court mediation sites, and I'll then take you through examples of those, and we will give you this list. So there are courts that have been indicated, as you see, in Eastern Cape. We're talking Aliwal North, Bizana, Cradock, East London, Kafrenia, Humanstop, King Williamstown, Komani, Kwa Baka, Makanda, Nguma, Mtata, PE, Utenhage. I don't think I should go through the list, but you see in Free State, in Bloemfontein, or in the Free State, or the Bloemfontein cluster, there's about nine that the minister has already done. Like Bloemfontein, Botshabelo, Heilbron, Kroonstad, Kutadichaba, Sasolburg, etc. In KZN, we also have a number, a large number there, and we will make sure that you get then this list for your own records as well. And like I already said, this work is still under auditing by the AG. Now moving on.
Thank you, Chairperson. But Chairperson, in future, the department, when it comes here, it must send us all the slides, not opening the slides in here and saying they are going to send it to us.
Monday.
It's not correct, Chairperson. In future, they must send us the slides. Thank you.
Chair, I propose that looking at the volume of the slides, I think maybe the member was doing correct when he just took us through to mostly to the issues that affect the problem. Like the deputy minister has responded to the issues that need to be addressed before. So, you know, because we have the slides, we can go back to other issues of future data, but this will take us direct to those issues that affect the problem. It's normally as the other that we do all the other data. I don't want to say, I'm just pleading to you if you can allow that. Looking at all the slides, some of them clearly are for us to do.
Thanks for that. Honourable Member, there's a suggestion that she, in the presentation, she focuses on the provincial aspects. If members are okay with that, we can do it that way. The reason we went back to her doing every slide was because there seemed to have been an objection, especially when she skipped the child justice issue. If we go that route, let's allow her to finish the presentation. All members, we've got the documentation, and we will obviously engage with the document, and like I said earlier, this is not the last engagement we're going to have with the department. But I think in terms of the first concern around documentation, Deputy Minister, I think in future, we'll just ensure the documents are there.
Chair, I speak under correction, but were the slides not emailed to Parliament on Monday?
The presentation was emailed to Parliament, but these are some of the issues that I'm drawing attention to in order for it to have a provincial plan. But just to say as well, the amount of time that we had to prepare for this was not optimum. We really did our best to. We were given a few days' notice, and we really did our best to ensure that. We get information on time. This slide, as you can, if you compare this slide compared to the one we gave there, this have got more detail. So we really tried our best to get as much as possible in here. But going forward, we make sure everything that is being on the board, you would have received upfront. So yeah, my apologies. Then just on the civil side as well, we are aware that civil mediation is not working as well as we would have loved to as a department because the lawyers, the mediation service needs to be paid for over and above the legal fees that people are requested to pay for. So it means when you come with a lawyer and then there's going to be mediation, then the party must also then pay for mediation. So we are putting rules in place to see how we can work around it. So we are aware of that obstacle and the department is working on it. On the policy side, the three policies that we want to finalize is on the reform side, we want to ensure that bail, arrest and expungement dispensations are improved. It's on making our courts more efficient and effective and also be acceptable to the people we serve. So the policy work that's going to happen. And community courts is one of the issues that we want to deal with as a department because community courts will allow us to decrease the number of cases or the number of matters that are dealt with in our magistrate courts. So, and it will focus mostly on mediation type work, domestic violence. Okay, let me not pronounce on that, but there are certain matters that we believe would be better served in community courts rather than in that, and that is why we're working on community court policy. And then the policy choice on language of court proceedings, we want to ensure that as we deal with the foreign language interpreter efficiencies at the moment, there are longer-term things that need to be dealt with. For an example, should people be heard in the language they understand, or in the language that they would like or that they prefer, because we found that in some countries they don't offer all languages and dialects, and whereas in our department we tend to do that, so we'll be working on that. So those are the policies. Under state legal services, under masters, the master services that deals with deceased estates, trust, assets and guardians fund, we try to to increase access by ensuring that master's work is not only done in the 15 master's offices, but is extended in all others. But just to give you a sense of the 10 and 15 that we've done this year, is these are the 27 service points where we brought out master's services, particularly under deceased estates, so people do not have to go far to get their small estates. And the small estates would be done on-site, and the larger estates would be captured at the site, but then will be sent via electronic channels to the master wherever they are. So these are additional ones that we have then dealt with in the financial year that has just passed.
Thank you.
these are turnaround times on the work that we do in the masters. I don't have to go through the detail. We ensure that, for example, in deceased estates, letters of authority or letters of appointments are done online, on time, liquidation and distribution accounts are done on time, guardian fund people get their money on time, etc. So I won't go through that detail. It's indicated clearly in the document. But under flag number 32, I bring to your attention that under 10.10 insolvency policy, we want to finalize that policy. That policy will enable the country to grow more skills and to get a more transformed group of people that deal with insolvencies in the country. At the moment, it's a closed group of people, and we want to ensure that we bring in more people, more women, etc. in it, and we will be working hard on that. Under state attorneys, maybe slide 33 talks about increasing the number of PDI advocates. Each and every year, we want to have 200 new PDIs that haven't been briefed before to increase our capacity, and you will notice that under 11.1 to 11.3, we talk about targets to ensure that female PDIs and the value of the briefs as well as the amount of briefs are being targeted. And we also want to ensure that we decrease the legal cost of litigation by the state. And under 12.1, 12.2.3 on slide 36, it deals around targets on, but let me not go through that detail. Slide number 37, on the chief state law advisors, we ensure that the advice that we give or all the legislation that we scrutinize and certify, it must not be found wanting in the court. And we also have turnaround times under 13.1 to 13.3, 13.4 to 13.6, under flat signal. We don't need to go through that detail. Similarly, we ensure that we do treaties as a department, and all these treaties enable us to exchange criminals, etc., etc., and we sign up of the compliance thereof. The treaties that we have signed up under flat 40, we have to comply with. And each and every year, we write reports. There's a schedule of reports each and every year, and we must produce those reports. But those reports must also show whether we comply with the obligations or not. So the list of international obligations that we reported on are shown. And then on slide number 42, the turnaround time. And under 14.3, we also then ensure that we do bilateral agreements. I won't go through the detail of that. Under legislation as well, we won't go through the detail of the bills, research code rules, etc. They are indicated in the, from slide 45, you will see a whole lot of list of legislation and rules that we have signed up, that we have done in the previous year. On the constitutional development side, we will provide more detail also on that one, on the side that we deal with, but firstly, our objective is to ensure that people are aware and exercise their rights, their human rights. But specifically, we have found that we want to focus, at least in the next 3 years, on the LGBT community and ensure that we address the issues that have been raised. And under 16.1 and 16.2, there are targets on awareness sessions and their cases. And then on slide number 53, we talk about training guide on victims of hate crime, and 16.4 is about trafficking in persons. And then on slide number 17, the recently finalized NAP needs to be implemented. The National Action Plan is normally called NAP, but is to combat racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerances. We know in the country there's been a major increase in intolerance, probably due to the Twitter, Facebook, etc. That is happening. We as a department must ensure that we implement all those actions that we have signed up for. And under flag number 55, it gives the detail of the implementation that we as a department are responsible to do, including ensuring that there's an intergovernmental team that is working on it and reporting, etc. Under TRC, community rehabilitation process program is not happening as quickly as we'd like to, and under slide 18 and 19, under slide 56 and 57, we ensure that project must then be finalized quickly. And then lastly, Chair, under the fifth program, that's where the integrated criminal justice system is located, and some of the projects, I think the DM has already indicated progress, but we ensure that we must do monitoring of the entire criminal justice system by ensuring that all our KPIs are ready and monitored. And under slide 60, we then talk about the activities us as a department must do in support of that. The KPIs that have been done are shown in slide 61 for your information, and the departments that are already exchanging information via the IJS are shown then on slide 62. This is now the test labs. We thought if you want more detail around what is happening in the test labs, what have we done so far in the last 2 years, is also indicated on the slide. Now, that concludes my presentation. Just to mention that we have finalized the APP with the guidance of the new minister and the deputy minister, and it is done for the 2021 the 2019-20 is done, but the 5-year plan is still under consideration. The government is working on finalization of the 5-year plan, and then next year when we table our APP, it will have infused all the issues that are raised in the 5-year plan. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Deputy Minister, do you want the NPA and SIU, or should we take them after?
Chair, I would suggest that you have all the inputs because the SIU and the NPA were part of the issues that you specifically asked about. So I would want to suggest that you have all the inputs and then there's questions on everything.
Right. Thanks. Advocate Victoria, are you presenting this?
Honourable Chair, is it okay if the SIU went ahead of us? We're just getting the slides in order.
It's not a problem. Yeah. I think the SIU presentation will be done first.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Honourable Members. When we received the invitation to attend the House, the letter that was sent to the minister, copying the deputy minister and the director general, was made available to us. And it specifically mentioned that when in the department's preparation, they should include the following. And then there's bullet points there. And the fifth bullet point mentions steps to strengthen enforcement of implementation of special investigative unit remedial action by state institutions. So we have made an input into the minister's presentation or speech with specific reference to that point. Should the committee deem it appropriate, as the Honorable Chair mentioned earlier on, we will be in a position to present our APP to the committee if required. We have it ready. We have presented it to the portfolio committee yesterday in full, and we stand ready at any time when the committee can really give us time to do that. Now, with specific reference to this point on measures to strengthen SIU's implementation of the remedial actions by the state institutions.
Advocate Matiri, just a moment.
Point of order, Madam Speaker.
ke botsa re batho bana ha ba tla mona ba tle ba se sira so re ba to kopana re ba tlo ba sira so they are undermining us. Each and everyone want to just to come and represent his story and go away. So that's why I fail to understand or the very same person who was before her, I was supposed to ask him some of the questions, but you will find that she just represents without any documents. What is that? Why should the Rehem and Omra be something that will come from other sides in this Mubilaho?
We're still going to engage the presentation, right?
Okay, can I start to ask some of the questions?
We're going to engage all the presentations once they're done.
Yeah, but this is a problem because they are representing, I don't follow their...
You don't follow their presentation?
Yes, that is a problem. I want to read the example. Can I get a document?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think what we should do as members, because we have agreed that we'll have all the presentations made, we should note the questions of the first presenter and also the deputy minister. And even in this one, we keep on making our notes of our questions. But it's true that when we start presenting, at least some of us who are new in the house, you must just tell us which document is he dealing with now, so that we are able to follow. Thanks, Jim.
Okay. All members, I understood you to be noting your questions anyway. I didn't think we needed to put that in our processes. But be that as it may, Honourable Matamai, you need to note your question. This presentation on the SIU is in relation to the first presentation that was made. It is also on the document that you received. Okay. I'm going to allow the SIU to finish. He's going to be speaking to us just on one issue. And thereafter we'll deal with the NPA. And you're free to ask whatever questions you need to ask thereafter. Please note the questions. And on the side.
No, Chair, thank you very much. I've been observing this, and I don't want us for members to get out of this place with the view that we don't want to cooperate with departments. And because it's our first teaching, and they always say first impressions last. And when I hear what the DM has been saying and what the SIU is also saying is that there was a correspondence sent to them with specific questions that members of the committee is not aware of. That is where the breach came in. Because the letter is, the chair sent the letter, and the members of the committee is not aware of that letter. I'm not sure. Because based on that letter, that's what they are presenting. Now there seems to be a lot of interjections, and it's eating time. And now I feel very uncomfortable as I sit here, because people have been given a brief on how what to answer on, and they are here to answer based on the brief that they have been given. But we seem as the committee that we seem not to cooperate, as if we don't know what we're looking for, and that is something that we need to clarify. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. But I think when we started, we indicated that there were issues that came out of the State of the Nation Address and the National Development Plan. And I think when the Minister responded, he also indicated that our basic expectation is also for members to understand that. But that's notwithstanding the fact that you don't have the document. I was not under the impression that it was not given to all members. But perhaps members, let us agree that in future, all documentation, irrespective of within the select committee or from the department, will be delivered to members well in advance. I think in relation to our meeting yesterday as well, we had a similar type of problem, and I think moving forward as a cluster will ensure that all documents, irrespective of internal or external, should be given to members well in advance, so you're able to read them and apply your mind before presentations are made. Okay. Advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. Our input to the minister's speech was as follows, relating to this specific point that was mentioned in the letter of invite. And the point reads as follows. Steps to strengthen enforcement of implementation of special investigating unit, remedial action by state institutions. The point covered in the minister's presentation states as follows. There have been several proclamations by the president on investigations that the special investigating unit must undertake within its mandate. And just to indicate, our mandate is given in terms of the Special Investigating Units and Special Tribunals Act 74 of 1996. That legislation envisages, amongst others, as a main mandate for the SIU to seriously to investigate matters of serious maladministration, malpractices, including corruption, in connection with the administration of state institutions, state assets, and public money, but also envisages the establishment of special tribunals related to the investigating units that the president would have established. This special investigating unit, the current one, has been established in 1996, and since then there has not been any other special investigating unit that has been set up. So various proclamations that have been issued by various presidents have been referred to this current special investigating unit. Now, as we investigate all these matters in relation to the question posed to us, when we investigate the maladministration, malpractice and corruption, we reach the following four main outcomes. When we have evidence that points that there has been misconduct by any officials of state, we refer those disciplinary matters to the accounting authority or the accounting officer, as the case may be. The second outcome is that if we find that there has been irregularities that require us to institute civil litigation, we then present all the cases that require civil litigation for adjudication by the court. The third outcome is that if there is evidence pointing to criminality, our legislation requires us to refer that evidence to the National Prosecuting Authority. The fourth and last outcome would be if we, during the investigation, we come across inefficiencies in the department, we do then make recommendations for systemic improvements. Now, what are the measures we have taken to strengthen all the implementation of all those remedial actions? Starting off with the disciplinary processes. Our legislation requires of us to refer those matters to the state institutions. We do not have, our remedial action in terms of the legislation are not binding. And this is the part that we will include in the envisaged amendments of the SIU Act with the assistance of Parliament, specifically this committee. When we process those amendments, we could, in a way, find a provision that would assist with the, implementation of those remedial actions. At the moment, the disciplinary actions that are referred to the state institutions, they are left with the responsibility of accounting officers and accounting authorities to implement. The only thing we can do at the moment is to follow up and find out if the state institutions have implemented the disciplinary actions. Where they have not implemented those, we do find out why. In any event, it is also expected as part of the accounting authority's top officer roles to execute their functions in that regard. It is their responsibility to keep discipline in their institutions. So that's that part. So when it comes to all of this disciplinary processes. The president has decided to issue out and release the reports of Special Investigation Unit. Because when we complete our investigations, we submit the report to the president. But all of those outcomes would have been actioned even before the report. So in releasing this report to the state institutions, amongst others, the president required to know what has the accounting authorities done to implement SIU remedial actions. So that's really the best we can do without an appropriate legislative framework. Now, when it comes to the referrals to NPA, there is, at the least at the moment, a legislative framework. Our legislation requires that, and it reads as follows, that when the matters have been referred to NPA, they must be dealt with in the manner that, you know, serves the public interest. It doesn't go further than that. So we believe that there's possibly legislative constraints, but we have been engaging with the NPA, specifically with the NDPP recently. All the matters that we have referred to NPA, we've got the list, they've got the list, we are reconciling those lists, we are also prioritizing the matters that need to be actioned, and we expect that there would be action coming out of those referrals. Because our expectation is that the matters that have been referred need to be acted upon, and the kind of action we want to see, and that the public wants to see, is that either there's prosecution or there's decision not to prosecute, in which case we'd like to understand the reasoning behind declining to prosecute. If there has been a lack of evidence, where is it that we have not collected evidence? So we expect that. The other point that I've mentioned is civil litigation. In this regard, there has been recent development. And this recent development really are giving us comfort that this part will be strengthened. And this is the part that includes recovery of monies, the recovery of assets. That part, I think, has really been strengthened. And that includes the re-establishment of the special tribunal. And that part is in our legislation. At least that part is clear. So the special tribunal, the president in February issued out a proclamation for that special tribunal to be re-established. We've been working together with the Department of Justice to make sure that that special tribunal is re-established and starts functioning. We are at a stage now where the Department of Justice is working together with the tribunal president that has been appointed, and the several judges appointed in the provinces to make sure that this special tribunal is effective. We are at a stage where the rules and the regulations of the special tribunal have to be worked on and to be finalized. We are envisaging that that tribunal should be functional soon. So that's really in brief on the strengthening of the implementation of the remedial actions of SIU, as was expected by the question that was posed. So going forward, the main focus would be on us presenting the recommended amendments of the of our mandating legislation, so that we can review some of those shortcomings when it comes to other outcomes. So, Chairperson, I wanted to stick to the brief and speak to the strengthening of the SIU remedial actions. As I said, should the committee deem it appropriate for us to come and present our full APP, we are ready to do that. Thank you very much. We are really pleased, and we thank you for the opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you, Advocate Matthew.
Yes, I just want to know from the speaker that...
Are you asking a question?
I just want to ask him a question.
Can you note your question? You'll be allowed to ask after the final presentation.
Yes, okay. Because there's something that he mentioned.
No, for sure. Just note the question.
Okay.
Thanks. Advocate Patel.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. This is my first appearance at before this committee, and I was also, like Advocate Matibi said, given very specific questions. So we will address that, but in an attempt to ensure that the committee is perhaps a little better informed, we did voluntarily send our APP. Hopefully that has been received. But we will specifically address the issues, and we are happy to send the APP if it hasn't been received. The issues that were raised were particularly to update this committee on plans to strengthen the NPA, including appointing more prosecutors, and steps for NPA to have its own separate budget vote. And the second point was to update the committee on the new investigative directorate of the NPA to investigate serious, complex, and high-profile corruption cases, and progress on implementing TRC recommendations to prosecute persons refused amnesty for apartheid crimes. So I will deal with those three issues in the interest of making it a little bit easier for the committee to follow. We have done a presentation at the last minute. In future, we will again, if this is the way the committee would prefer it, we would, sufficient time given, certainly make sure that the relevant presentations are sent in advance. So, with regard, gosh, it's not really easy looking up here and trying to read off that. Maybe I can swap with you, perhaps, and it's a bit easier for that. Oh, okay, thank you. I have the same presentation. Thank you. So, plans for strengthening the NPA and appointment of more prosecutors. The issue with regard to the capacity of the NPA, with regard to resources as well as skills, is dire. And we have been, the present budget cuts in the recent years has resulted in about 600, Hanika has all the budget details, but we're not going to do the presentation, but it has resulted in about a vacancy rate of about 20% across the NPA, and about between 25 and 28% in the specialized capacities like the SCCU, that's the Specialized Commercial Crimes Unit, as well as the Asset Forfeiture Unit, as well as the Sexual and Gender-Based Crimes capacity. Well, that's the Sexual Offences and Community Affairs section in the NPA. So, you know, these are key priority areas for government where we have serious capacity issues. So we have been engaging with the minister, the old minister, as well as the new minister and the DG with regard to how we could look at addressing this situation. We haven't been able to recruit in the National Prosecuting Authority since 2015, which is part of the problem. And there are further budget cuts that have been implemented by Treasury, which, if implemented, will really render a seriously problematic situation to be, difficult in terms of us having to deliver on the mandate of the NPA. So, I mean, the obvious one is to look at an increase in budgetary allocations, and we're looking at how we can do it when opportunities present within this budget cycle and in the next cycle moving forward. We'd have to engage with the DG as well as with Treasury to see what allocations could be made for the NPA. The existing vacant posts to be filled, and that is, there's been an embargo on recruitment, as I said, in the NPA. What we will do is the plan is to look at prioritization of positions within the NPA. We know that we're not going to get everything that the NPA wants, but we've got to look at those key areas where, for example, sexual and gender-based crimes, the SCCU, which is Specialized Commercial Crimes Unit, which we will do a presentation, I will do a presentation on the directorate after this. And so we are able to funding for the directorate has been together with the Department of Justice, they've given us an allocation of $38 million, which on the face of it is not a lot of money. We need a lot more than that, but it's helping to start up the operations. And we've also made a bid for CARA funding, which is the Criminal Assets Recovery Account, the money that is the asset forfeiture, we have made a bid to get money from there, so at least the directorate will be able to start up and you know, get going with the investigations that it needs to do. But with regard, as the directorate, as I will explain when I do the presentation, will only do a small part of corruption cases. And so the NPA, the specialized commercial crime part of the NPA, will have a huge, there's, you know, workload in terms of addressing corruption. So we need to certainly look at prioritizing that, prioritizing the sexual offenses unit, and also looking at the asset forfeiture unit. You know, it's a cycle, really. If we capacitate the asset forfeiture unit, we're able to forfeit more assets, we're able to, you know, have deposit more money into the criminal assets recovery account, and that will benefit not just law enforcement, but the government in general, in terms of having more available for budget. So we're looking at increased management training programs. There's a lot of, the fact that we have no funding makes it very difficult to have these training programs, because the reality is that 89% of the NPA budget is compensation for staff. That leaves 11% of the budget, and that's unsustainable, because it means that staff don't have the tools that they need in order to do their work properly. So, you know, that situation certainly has to change, and we're going to look at how we could deal with that. One of the positive parts of this is that the aspirant prosecutor program, which basically in the past used to bring in university graduates into this program, which was suspended for about 3 years, has now been resuscitated. So together with the Department of Justice and the NPA, we've resuscitated on a zero-cost basis. So basically what we've done is we've looked at legally trained persons within the NPA that are not prosecuting and within the Department of Justice, and we've brought them into this aspirant program. And so the department has agreed to fund them once they, for the next year. And so the NPA, we were paying them, they will continue to be paid. But obviously it does create a gap with the jobs that they were doing, and we're looking at how we can actually manage that internally. So we do have aspirant prosecutors that will start, and so this will have an impact in the courts, you know, nationally in all the provinces. And so, you know, there's about just over 90 prosecutors that will be go through this program and will be available to start working at the district court level within the next month or so. There's a whole lot of plans that we are looking in terms of how we could capacitate prosecutors with regard to new crime types that are coming up, like cybercrime. And at the moment, the skills are very, very low. So there has been a lot of support externally to provide training, and we need to look at, together with the account, together with the DG and with Treasury, to look at how we could ensure that we're able to actually access funding and support without, in compliance with all of the necessary regulations. So that discussion is ongoing. And so we're also looking at non-legal training with assistance of service providers and the National School of Government. The plan for the NPA to have its own separate vote, this is not a new thing. It's been on the agenda for the National Prosecuting Authority, and previous national directors have raised this. It is a crucially important issue, and the present minister has also raised it. We are in discussions with the minister as well as with the DG. And what this will in effect do is that it would give the National Prosecuting Authority administrative independence and its own independent accounting officer. At the moment, the DG of Justice is the accounting officer for the National Prosecuting Authority. This would enable the NPA also to make its own bids for its own separate budget. At the moment, it is part of the Greater Justice bid. And so these plans and these engagements are ongoing. At the moment, we are looking at the final version of a memorandum to the minister that will set out a request for this to be implemented. And we also have to look at technical amendments to the NPA Act, which would be necessitated if this goes through. We also have to look at together with the Department of Justice, you know, budgetary. At the moment, the Department of Justice is responsible for the lower court prosecutors, and we have to look at the implications of implementation of this. And so ensure that we have a plan to ensure that there's smooth transitions and that the process moves through as speedily as possible. That's as far as the capacitation is concerned, and I'm happy to take questions to clarify and to give more details. We were then asked about the progress on implementing the TRC regulations. I hope we have it in the same order in the other presentation, because this was revised. Salome, are you with me? Okay, so thank you. The progress on implementation of the TRC recommendations. As this committee is aware, the TRC recommendations was that persons who were refused amnesty for apartheid crimes, which I will loosely use, should be prosecuted. The NPA has over the years looked at cases where amnesty was refused, but also cases where amnesty was not applied for. At the moment, there are two cases that are enrolled in the High Court. It's a Rodriguez matter, where a former security branch officer is charged with the murder of Ahmed Timol in detention, and the case of Kutsia and two others, where three former security branch members are charged with the murder of Nokutula Simelane, which is an enforced disappearance case. And I'll deal with the decision of the judge in the Rodriguez matter in the application for a permanent stay in a second. But in addition to those cases, there are, as you say, you know, over 100 cases that are still under investigation, and there's a review being conducted into over 300 cases at the moment. So the Rodriguez judgment is an important one. It is an application where it's the applicant Rodriguez asked for a permanent stay of prosecutions for various reasons. The judge refused that application, but during in the judgment mentioned the following, which has relevant to the national director. The judge said that the conduct of the relevant officials and others outside of the NPA at the time should be brought to the attention of the national director of public prosecutions for her consideration, and in particular, to consider whether any action in terms of Section 41(1) of the NPA Act is warranted. I'll explain that in a second. Finally, the judge went on to say there must be a public assurance from both the executive and the NPA that the kind of political interference that occurred in the TRC cases will never occur again. In this regard, they should indicate the measures, including checks and balances, which will be put into place to prevent a recurrence of these unacceptable breaches of the Constitution. Now, Section 41(1) of the NPA Act relates to where there has been interference in the work of the NPA. So that is what the judge said in that decision, and that application is, there's currently an application for leave to appeal that decision, and obviously we will have to wait for the outcome of that application. But in addition to what the judge has said in that case, the lawyers for the families have also formally requested the Commission of Inquiry into State Capture to also investigate this matter. And so, you know, we have to await the decision of the commissioner in that regard. And in addition, there have been calls to have a separate Commission of Inquiry to look into these matters. So the point I make is that we have these separate streams, so to speak. We have the decision of Rodriguez, which places an obligation on the NPA, which is of the national director, to look into these matters, which is subject of appeal. You have calls by the families to the Zondo, to the Commission of Inquiry into State Capture, and you have calls to have a separate Commission of Inquiry. So all of these require that there has to be a coordinated approach in terms of how we deal with these matters. And the families want closure. Understandably, they want to know what happened to their loved ones in some mechanism. And so we need to collectively, you know, the NDPP with her the obligation placed by the court, as well as the executive where they've been called, look at what is the best way that we can actually have not separate streams looking at this and different commissions, but one mechanism in order to address this issue. So there are discussions that are ongoing with regard to how that can, what's the best way forward in that regard. With regard to inquests, I should say that there were 69 deaths in detention between 1963 and 1990. Some families have actually asked you know, that the inquest with regard to the death of their loved ones be re-looked at and be reopened. And so there have been inquests that have been reopened, but also the inquest into the death of detention of Dr. Neil Agate and Mr. Hafaji. We were about to reopen it, but we didn't, because what in the investigation we actually found that there were two other detainees where families have not come forward, but they were detained in the same place, and they met their deaths in very similar circumstances. So we've now called that back because we think we should look at all of them collectively and maybe hold a joint inquest to find out what exactly happened there. But there are families with means that have specifically requested that these matters be looked into. As the NPA, we've decided that we need to look at all 69 deaths, and so look at whether any of these inquests can be reopened, and in order to properly understand what happened and whether anyone could be held responsible for the deaths of those persons. In addition, the DPSCI has 37 active investigations, and the NPA is conducting a review of a number of cases that were closed over the years. In addition to this, this also gives you an indication of the enormity of what needs to be done, is that the DPCI has now indicated that they found over 700 TRC cases where assessments will have to be conducted. Why this was not done, I cannot give answers here, but clearly, you know, these matters need to be given the necessary attention. I'd also like to bring to the attention of this committee the fact that there are various constraints to dealing with these matters. Firstly, the age of these cases, the availability of the accused and witnesses, location of dockets, court records, etc. Inquests older than 10 years have been destroyed, and so we needed to look at reconstructing these matters. The lack of adequate research capacity, and I mentioned the call of NGOs to actually have other commissions of inquiry into this matter. So it is not going to be an easy exercise. And given the as I explained, the resource issues in terms of trying to deal with what's happening at the moment, we need to find a way of how we could actually get additional resources to also deal with these matters in a speedily and in an effective way. Well, we're not meant to end there. I think it's now the ID presentation, I think. I need to hand this over. If we could perhaps maybe, Salome, just start, put the ID presentation on there, and I can start talking to it in the meantime, whilst you get that to me. Okay, the background, I'll be quite quick on this, to the establishment of the Investigating Directorate. On the 7th of February this year, during the State of the Nation address, the President expressed his commitment to ensuring that government takes action to enhance the integrity of government by holding criminally liable those found to be involved in serious, high-profile, and complex corruption. The directorate was established on the 4th of April this year, and Advocate Cronier was appointed on the 20th of May this year. So, what are the short-term operational interventions? We need to actually, in the short term, identify priority cases. As I said earlier, the directorate has a very specific mandate, and if we don't have very specific intake criteria, which we are working on at the moment, the directorate has, there's a danger that this directorate will be inundated with a tidal wave of cases that will come to it. So we have to have very specific case selection criteria, and a lot of cases will still have to be investigated by the Hawks and the DPCI that would fall out of the selection criteria. So at the moment, we need to investigate priority cases that are emanating from the various commissions of inquiry, and to investigate and prosecute these, but also importantly, to recover the assets and to recover the proceeds of crime and corruption. It's important to note that the establishment of the directorate is not a long-term solution. It is a short-term, you might as well call it a sort of project, although it's not really a project, but it's a short-term intervention to actually address an immediate crisis that the country is facing. And so we need to remember that in the long term, we do need to find a lasting, enduring solution. In order to do this, you know, the executive and legislative arms of government also need to be involved. And once the state capture, the commissions of inquiry into state capture and the other commissions, once they've made their recommendations, they will no doubt also make recommendations about what needs to be done to ensure that this doesn't happen again and how we could have some kind of more enduring solution. In addition to that, the lessons that we learn from the experience of the directorate will also feed into that more longer-lasting, enduring solution. I've touched on this already, the fact that, you know, the investigating directorate will deal with a small portion of the corruption, and that, you know, this is not a panacea for all corruption in South Africa. The role of the SAPS, the DPCI, the SIU, still remains crucially important. And also within the regions, the DPPs and other specialized prosecution units like the Specialized Commercial Crime Unit needs to ensure that corruption in the regions that fall outside of the work of the directorate is properly managed in the provinces. And that's hugely important because, you know, the directorate is now, the funding for the directorate is coming through. But we need to understand that there's a massive amount of corruption that's not going to be investigated by the directorate. And there we have skills in the hawks. There are massive problems with skills in the hawks in the NPA and FCCU, with capacity issues. And if you add to that issues of corruption, and I'll deal with that in a second. So the scope of the ID's work is basically they've divided their work into three focus areas. Corruption in the security sector, which includes the criminal justice system and intelligence agencies, corruption at state-owned enterprises, and other high-level corruption in both the public and private sector. And private sector corruption is also an important issue that has been neglected and needs to be addressed. I've explained the fact that they will deal with a small portion of their cases, and in the short term, the focus of this directorate is really to look at cases that are already on the court roll that the NPA is already dealing with, and cases that we can enroll within 6 months. For example, cases that were on the court roll and have now been taken off, or that are presently on the court roll. I've talked about case intake criteria. I know time is of the essence. I can talk to this if members would like me to. Otherwise, we can give details about it during question time. So I'm in your hands. But we have selected case intake criteria, and maybe I can just run through it very quickly. I'm in your hands, Honourable Chair.
I think on this one, maybe if you provide us with this information, when the committee has time, we'll actually go through some of it. But I think you've quite comprehensively covered other aspects. Do you still have to? Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And then the resourcing issue, I've talked a little bit about it, but this is an important issue. We are assembling teams with regard to the various investigations. Largely this will be based on public sector secondment arrangements. But knowing how depleted the resources in the public sector is, it's proving to be quite a challenge. And, skills and expertise and people. You know, we need to have investigators from the DPCI. But speaking to General Libya, he says, I have 4,000 posts and I've only got 1,500 people. But we are working closely together and he is making some capacity available. It's not a lot, but that is why we will need to look at how we could actually engage, outside of government in order to be able to get the skills and expertise that is required to deal with these very complex investigations. Security and integrity monitoring is a priority. We have to make sure that those that come to work in the directorate pass the various pre-selection screening, lifestyle audits, and to ensure that we minimize the risk of getting people that are compromised in the directorate. And that as well poses quite a, on the SSA, that actually deals with these issues. They have capacity constraints. So all of these things pose a lot of challenges. The legal personnel should ideally come from prosecutors in the NPA. I've talked about how bad the situation is. We've put out an internal advertisement for prosecutors to express an interest.
We've had 30 that have actually agreed to come through. This is way below what we would need at the end of the day. So we've requested the appointment of 4 senior counsel and 1 junior counsel. The memorandum's going through to meet immediate needs. But in addition, the NPA will go out on a tender for a panel of service providers to provide legal support to the directorate and also utilize the national treasury tender in order to obtain forensic capacity in the short term. It's a similar situation with the investigators, but we've engaged with the various entities, DPCI, IPID, Financial Intelligence Center, SARS, regarding secondment of investigators. They've all committed. The good thing is that there's a very strong commitment to making this work. It's just about getting the resources internally or externally, and also utilizing National Treasury tender for forensic capacity, as I mentioned, but also for the investigators. The budget, as I said, we've had 38 million allocation from the DOJ at the moment. The bid for CARA funding, 44 million in the current financial year and 264 for the next 3-year cycle. This includes costs associated with witness protection and asset forfeiture, 85 million. It should not be underestimated how important and how expensive witness protection is. And that will require a lot of KIPP funding. We're looking to do an AENE bid for 44 million in the current financial year and the full bid of 291 for the next MTEF period, and it's set out there over the next 3 years. We also need to have a mechanism to receive gifts and donations. As I said, there's a lot of support, but we have to make sure that we have proper processes in place so that there's no compromise about those wanting to actually assist and support. So together with the Department of Justice and with National Treasury, we need to make sure that there's very clear processes that are put in place to ensure that these are properly managed and very transparent. The key activities of the ID, the director, Advocate Cronier, who's here, and myself, we've engaged with a number of these entities. Counterparts also, law enforcement abroad, like UNODC, the Office for Drugs and Crime, is it? Also to facilitate mutual legal assistance. It's really important. The mutual legal assistance aspect of these investigators also cannot be underestimated, because there's an estimate that about 1/3 of the GDP of the country has been stolen, and that's a lot of money. And there's also, indications that a lot of it is outside of the country. So we need to have really very strong mutual legal assistance treaties, and we need to have the necessary agreements in place. And this needs to be working effectively if we want to try to bring the money back, but also to extradite persons that may be the subject of investigations or may be charged in due course. And the aim for July in the short term is for the director to formally declare a batch of short-term investigations, to formally constitute teams, and to sign off on the first drafts of project plans, which, as I mentioned, will be declared in July. And that's the end of my presentation. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Victoria. I was going to stop you anyway.
Sorry, Paul.
Deputy Minister, is there anything you need to add?
That's it. We can then take questions.
Okay. No, thank you, Deputy Minister and the team for such a comprehensive presentation, and apologies to the members, I think, in terms of the lack of some documentation, but going forward, I'm sure we'll sort that matter out. Honourable members, if we can engage with the four presentations.
Before that, why are we here? We are here to receive the annual reference plan of the department and the budget. They have not presented their budget. That's understood.
Yeah, true that, Deputy Minister.
And we'll come to how our observations about this meeting. But we need to pass the budget of the department, and precisely why the department is here is to present the budget to us and the APP.
Lebo has got that presentation. I think, unfortunately, I think we must all accept it's the first meeting of the committee is starting. But anyway.
It can be done.
Okay, Honourable Mutesa.
May we request Chair in our current position that we have to give a disaster report before we start voting. We have to give a disaster report given to us and their ATP as well. It will assist us because some of who would have spent a lot from the department yet report this information in Panama. There was an ATP report. If we can be given the so that when we start, we will move from that level going forward. You see, there right now, Chair, if I would also give a good question here, it's surprising when you look at the MTA that the way they are understood. And the way there are issues that they are really of serious nature that need to be attended with the budget that they get, but we have not put it budget.
Yeah.
But looking at it, the most amount of the money is both the 89% that goes for professionals and for the staff.
Cheddar, are you entering questions? Because I think the point made by Honourable Dodori is that we didn't get a presentation on the budget. So I thought we'll allow them maybe 10 minutes to just take us through the budget. And then we'll, the question, can we just note it for now? If you want us to repeat it, we'll do then. I'll be sure.
No, I thought, Chair, you were raising a matter of concern that needs to be attended to going forward. Because I don't think we can do it right now.
Yeah. But I think in terms of documentation, it was emailed. But I know your challenges around your email. So,
Thanks, Chair and members. I'm going to take you through a number of slides. I'm not going to focus on all of them. I'm going to focus on the key ones that deal with the money issues. I'm giving this presentation on behalf of our CFO, who unfortunately couldn't make it this morning. Like I already said, the content page, we are not going to deal with all the issues. We are going to deal with the high-level budgetary issues. I'm going to take you then, Chair, to slide number, the slide on the composition of performance of our budget. We just analyzed our year end, or we actually busy going through the audit, and from this audit you will see in the report that has been indicated that we have not spent all our budget, and there are issues why our budget was not completely spent. But taking into account that we have a large budget of billions, 204.4 million might seem like a lot of money.
There is a presentation on the budget in your package as well. You may continue.
Yes. So let me then continue. Of the 444 million that was not spent, 112 of that, one-fourth of it, was money earmarked for posts. Some of the senior posts have already been filled, but people haven't been on those posts yet, or by the end of March. It's really where we know that this money will be spent then in the new financial year. The goods and services budget, 10 million, of all those billions, it's only 10 million that we couldn't spend. But that's also because the 10 million was given back to us by the OCJ as well. Then the statutory did not spend their 1 million, but the state capture, this money we also can't spend, it's allocated for state capture of 138 million, that went unspent, and similarly for SARS commission. Now, with regards to magistrate salaries as well, we cannot spend that money because it's allocated and earmarked for magistrates. So of all that money, really, the department would have been responsible for only then the 10 million rand. All others would have been earmarked money for other areas. Then on the next slide, just to give you a sense of do we really have budget, do we really have discretionary budget? Most of our budget is locked up in people, and it's locked up in earmarked funds such as big capture, etc. So our discretionary budget really is around 6%. That green pie, that green part of the pie, is really what we have to maneuver around. So we don't have a lot of budget to give away, to spend. We also are highly constrained as a department, but we also have the same problem with the entities that report to the minister, that they are similarly like us constrained, and as a department we cannot also assist them. High spending items, and we compare now 2017-18 and 2018-19. You will see that we spend a lot of money as a department on leases. 2017-18, we spent 781 million on leases for accommodation for our offices, etc. And in 2018-19, we spent 1 billion on that. So there's been a 47% increase, but that also takes into account the accrual that we brought in from 2017-18 to 2018-19. So, business of leases is a major issue for us. Electricity and water has been, but at least in 2018-19, or in 2017-18, we took care of accruals so that in 2018-19, our spending was decreased by 12%. Security is one of our cost drivers as well, increase of 5%. And it's just inflationary increases, travel and subsistence, same. Computer and IT services, it has decreased somewhat, but this is due to Department of Correctional Services issues, contractual issues on the ICMS, or on the Criminal Justice System Implementation Project called the IIMS. There was spending there was a contract that was stopped. Outsourced services increase of 27%, mostly due to the commissions. They have outsourced quite a lot of people because they are, of course, temporary creatures. Stationary 12%. Again, a lot of spending increase is due to the commissions. Communication, we have relooked at our communication and are using more efficient channels. And legal services as well, due to the state commissions, we see a 22% increase there. Cost containment measures on the next slide is mentioned as slide number 11. We see most of our costs, we have a major increase, as you see on the graph, spending on consultants. We would have loved to have contained that as a department, but again, because of the issues of state capture, we have seen the cost of consultants going up substantially. I think it's one area that has increased between the 2 years. Budget cuts. Just to give you a sense here of the amount of budget cuts that the department has been experiencing through the years. You will notice that each and every year, we actually get a 3 year budget allocation, but each and every year we normally would have been reducing. The National Treasury would have been telling us to cut, and in fact the total cut since 2014-15 amounts to 4 billion rand. So we are expected to do more as a department, but as you can see, our budget has really in real terms has been cut by almost 5 billion rand. But that then affects our ability to implement the programs that we would like to do. So we tend to then curb the amount of spending on implementation of programs. And given as well, I've indicated that we only have 6% discretionary budget, so we don't cut people so much, but it means then our goods and services budget are severely constrained. Allocation for programs, you will notice then that we've got four programs within the department: administration, court services, legal services, NPA, and auxiliary. And that's our budget. The total vote, for example, for us as a department is going to be sitting at 18 billion for 2019-20. And the majority of that money goes to court services, followed by the NPA and auxiliary and associated services. That's where the Legal Aid South Africa, Public Protector, the ICJS, and the IJS program are sitting there at 3 billion and then administration at 2 million. We expect a 7% increase in that budget for 2020-21, but already we have been told by the National Treasury that we must expect more budget cuts. We've been told to come back to the National Treasury and indicating where else, which programs we must cut budget on. And this information is needed within the next 2 weeks. So it means we are expecting even further major budget cuts within our midst. Budget allocation per economic classification, this is where we show the compensation of employees versus goods and services and transfers, value transfer to other entities and payments for capital works. Capital works, they allow us, we work with the Department of Public Works, so we give them money to help us implement our capital program. So this is how it actually looks like. As indicated, compensation of employees by far the biggest portion of our budget. And the highest cost driver for the department, as already expected, compensation of employees by far the biggest, building and other fixtures, including leases, etc., not leases, but buildings, the ones that we own, computer services, followed by leases, and then property payments to municipalities. So that is how our costs are looking like. So like I already indicated, for 2019-20, they said we have a 7% budget cut, or 7% growth in our budget. But we are expecting that going forward we've been asked in fact specifically to cut even more. So even the 7% growth in 2021 will not happen. We'll see much less than that. And then Chair, I want to then plus 21 indicate how the compensation of employees has been growing relevant to other budget lines in our department. And you will see that it's a sharp increase on people, whereas we've got a much less increase in goods and services and all others. With regards to DPW, DPW will be underspending. Department of Public Works, those are the people that assist us to run to build new courts, to refurbish existing courts. They have indicated that they will be underspending by 200 million and because they don't have capacity to spend it. And it's good that they've let us know, because then the department has identified how else to then work with their budget to reallocate it to those issues that have been mentioned there, to desktops, laptops, other security infrastructure, like there's a program that we are now implementing where we reinforce security in the court, butler bars where they're needed, etc. So that money will be put to good use. And in some areas we use donors, so international aid donors assist us in some of the work we do, such as sexual offences courts, technical support, community advice centers. These community advice centers are the ones that assist us to deal with human rights issues. So advice centers are civil-based organizations or civic-based organizations that then advise farm workers and other vulnerable groups to exercise their rights. So that is normally also, we get some funding from international donors, etc. Fine. So, like I already indicated, there are further cuts that are expected that we've been asked to implement, and they are shown on the board. So for 2020, there's another reduction of 982 million. It will then grow to 1.2 billion and 1.3 billion in 2022-2023. So this shows the extent of our budget issues. I think I've dealt with this one of the historical budget cuts, and I think we've dealt with this one. I think that what is the impact then of our budget cuts? If we're looking at the budget cuts as they stand, and I'm not saying we're going to close the court, but budget cuts, to give the sense of how big the budget cuts are, it means with the budget cuts that as we are doing, we could be closing 24 courts. I'm not saying we'll close them, but is the equivalent of closing 24 courts. We will then have to decide, us as a department, what is it that we are closing and what, or what programs you're going to do and what programs you won't be able to do. But that's the, more or less the equivalence of the budget cuts that 24 courts, one master, one state attorney, one family advocate would be closing, but we will have to find something else in order not to implement any of those. So there are major challenges. I won't go through the list. You can read through it, but in us readjusting our budgets, we take into account all these issues. For example, we have to take into account new priority areas that the NDPP has already indicated. There's a new directorate there. Even with budget cuts, we make sure that the commissions happen, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a lot of inefficient, or there are a lot of areas where we have to be more efficient, and they are mentioned then in that slide. So, Chair, some of the cost driver items that are indicated on slide 31 is the sheriff of the court, communication, I think we've mentioned, psychiatric observations, witness fees, travel and subsistence. And some of these, the minister has already indicated that where we can use, for example, the sheriff of the court, we are thinking, there's a thinking that's current now, that we don't always have to serve service, we don't have to do service of process via the sheriff. We could find other electronic means of service, and that's something that we look into. So for some of those, even psychiatric observations, we have to work better than with the Department of Health, etc. Witness fees, we have to be more efficient around when witnesses appear in court, and where possible, we can stop them from coming to court. So there are things that we are working on to ensure that we address some of those cost drivers. Maybe not to touch on the regional spending, Chair, but in conclusion, I think it has the summary that things are difficult and are going to remain difficult, but we'll make sure that where there's efficiencies, we're going to move forward and implement. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
If I may, if the committee would like a very short presentation on the NPA budget, we do have slides, but that's entirely up to you.
I think for today, Advocate, it won't be necessary because your budget falls within the broader departmental budget anyway. Okay. But I think there will be a need, I think, going forward to look into your APP as well as that of the SIU. Honourable members, I can just hand over. Honourable Pedro, you can just repeat the question.
Can I make just a suggestion, Chair, before we start, that we get 5 minutes each morning?
Oh, okay.
That's
no,
all.
Sorry,
if you, Honourable Pedro, doesn't mind. That's 2 minutes.
Okay. I suggest when we take a 5 minute break. It is now 10 past. If we can be back at 12:15.
And then we know.
Thank you. Can you all take a seat, please?
Honorable Tetwa, I think we can start with you, and then Honorable Mola, Honorable Dogu, Honorable Matanai, Honorable Zita, Honorable Korea. Is there anyone else? Okay, let's start.
Madam Chair, mine is on the NPA. I will start with the NPA. One, the issue that they have raised of the capacity within the department. What plans do they have to overcome that? Because this is one of the most important departments. The second issue, Chair, is that they said they've been raising this for many, many years. Well, I'm new on this committee. But the issue of having their own separate budget vote, how is that going to assist the department if they will have their own separate vote? Maybe if they can explain that too. And in the issue of the staff shortage, it obviously it will mean that the other people are overworked in this department, or certain job is not being done. Can we get a spreadsheet or an organogram to tell us as to how many vacancies are in this department and the staff retention, so that we can deal with the whole issue together to see how the people are working in that department. Then on the budget side, Chair, I've seen in page 17 there's an indication of 2%. The 2%, it indicates a growth. But in 2021, there is also a 6% that is there, which indicates budgeting for 2021 is 6%, while all the other programs are 7%. What could be the reason for that? And maybe also I want the last one to be the clarity in terms of the negative growth. What is the negative growth in terms of the assets? Does it mean those assets are no longer needed in that department as they went off, or what? The negative growth, especially in page 19 and page 20. May I be explained on those negative growth? What are they? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. My first question goes to the Department of Justice. Where is the CFO of your department? Because now we are dealing with the budget. I didn't hear someone saying that I'm the CFO of the department. My second question, I hear that two people are acting. Are these posts vacant? If yes, when are you going to fill them? Because these posts are critical. My third question goes to the NPA. You said in cybercrime, skills are very low. How are you planning to improve skills? When are you planning to improve the skills? And when was the last training of the cybercrime? My last question, in slide 20, in slide 19, it's 18, 4.1. On your output indicators, you said percentage of criminal cases postponed to due to unavailability of court of court administration staff. Can you please give us clarity? What are you saying when you said unavailability of court administration staff? In slide 20, targets are so low. Why targets are so low? Why are you planning on 69, 55, 60, 65? Percentage of litigation matters finalized within 12 months. Targets are so low, Chairperson. Why are they planning? Why they are not planning of 100%? Because if they are planning what 55, which means they don't want to work. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm not going to ask questions precisely because there are a lot of issues that are at play, and given the time that we have, we are not going to be in the position to engage with all the issues quite appropriately. I'm just going therefore to make some observations which I think the department must take to heart. One, and I will preface that by saying the architects of our constitution placed this department at the apex of what we need to do as a country. If you look at our preamble of the Constitution, it starts just by saying, we the people of South Africa, we recognize the injustices of our past, which calls on this department to ensure that there is justice in our society. Now, this shows that this department is extremely important. Be that as it may, Chair, I'm extremely, extremely disappointed about what happened here since this morning. We should all know and know better that coming here was to do two things, the APP as well as the budget, in order for us to pass the budget as parliament of this department. But clearly, from the beginning, it shows for him, this department was not ready. There was a lot of confusion to an extent that all of our time to engage quite extensively with the issues at hand has been taken away. We are left with only 45 minutes or less to interact with this particular presentation or at least of what we were expected to do. Now, being that the case, Chair, one of the critical jobs of this department, as they say, is to restore public confidence of the department itself, or if you like, of the Chapter 8 institution and processes as a whole, as contained in our constitution. And one of those important institutions is the MPA. Now, I had expected the department to say, our image is battered. South Africans don't trust us. They don't have confidence in the work that we do. And this is what, in precision, we are going to do to ensure that we restore confidence of the people of this country in the criminal justice system. And where I see it, having listened to all the presentation, I don't get a sense on how this department and all its entities want to achieve that particular objective, namely to ensure that the people of this country trust these institutions. I mean, as well say, Chair, up front, that I'm quite excited with the appointments that the president has made, especially with regard to Advocate Batoy in the MPA, Comrade Jan Mutibi in the SIU, as well as Madam Kwenjo, who's going to head the special unit, investigating unit. This is okay. For one, I want to give them the benefit of doubt, but I must just say this to them, that they are facing a mountain to climb. This task that is before them, it is very, very serious and important, especially when South Africans don't have confidence in what has happened in the institutions that they are heading. That these institutions that they are heading, when they conduct their affairs, and I must just say this to them, that these institutions is known that they have eyes when they've got to deal with the issues that are before them. They will not personally convince me and convince the people that I lead in the Northwest up until they deal with the massive rampant corruption that has happened in the Northwest. As we speak today, Northwest as a government is under Section 100 of the Constitution. It is under administration. There are so many cases that have been reported to these particular institutions. Up until they convince me and convince the people of the Northwest that they mean business and they deal with these particular issues objectively, indiscriminately, without taking care as to who is involved, I will not be convinced that they are up to the challenge and they want to deal effectively with the challenges that are facing us. And for me, this is very, very much important. I'm saying this because there is a history to what has happened, not only in the Northwest, but throughout the country. I'll just make some two typical examples, Honorable Chair. I'm sitting here next to Mr. Motsamai, who spent 28 years in jail. He was only released 2 years ago. Nobody, even myself, where I sit, I don't know exactly what was the reason why he was not released as a political prisoner. I have not heard the Department of Justice say to us, yes, indeed, it is true that we still have political prisoners or not. What all these people are saying to us, that there are still political prisoners who are arrested, if that is the case, because they were fighting a heresy, a crime against humanity. I will not be convinced that they are up to the challenge and they are doing what is expected of them. That's a simple case to say, yes, indeed, there are political prisoners who are still in our prisons across the country, and this is what we are doing to attend to this particular issue. So equally important for me, Chair, it is the issue of the amnesties. I hear Advocate Batoy say they are busy with this Gugusi Melani case and this other case of this gentleman who killed Ahmed Timon. These cases, I put it to them that they had to deal with these cases because they were in the public domain. That there were serious concerted campaigns that they must be dealt with appropriately. How many of these similar cases of men and women who lost their parents, who lost their brothers and sisters, whose case have not been resolved, and the very same perpetrators didn't go to the Truth Commission. I regard this as a scapegoat of the highest order, that today, when the TRC has completed its work in 1998, 21 years later, we are still behaving as if we are in 1994. That we are still constructing, we are still putting up processes, systems, and structures in place. We are still doing this and that to get our house in order, as if we are in 1994. To me, it is is totally unacceptable. And these are some of the issues that needs to be dealt with quite appropriately as part of restoring that particular confidence to the criminal justice system. I wonder if it is possible, because part of what they say to us is to ensure that there is integration within the criminal justice system. I want to attend some of their meetings. I want their meetings to be televised, like our meetings are televised. They must tell us, what is it that these Hawks people, this NPA, this all other agencies and organs that are involved in the criminal justice system, do we actually? For example, Advocate Baton, Hawks says to the nation last week, we have sent about 1,000 cases before the NPA. What is the NPA doing with them? And at the heart of this are issues of corruption that is eating us up, that is destroying the moral fiber of this particular country. And for me, the issue of turnaround in all these particular cases is of paramount importance. We need to be told, if a matter is on the table today, how long does it take for this particular agencies to conclude it? It can't be a bottomless, perpetual a matter that cannot come to an end when our country, the cancer, is busy eating up. And for me, there is a solution to this. And one of the greatest politicians have said, arrest the president, arrest ministers, arrest me as a member of parliament, arrest the media to show that we are serious about this. And because oftentimes, people who are targeted are these ones at the lowest echelons. Those in the upper echelons are doing this with impunity and nothing is taken against them. And up until we go and confront these particular cases quite confrontationally, we'll be scratching the surface, and not only scratching the surface, we'll be doing this country a disservice, and it will be a betrayal to the architects of our constitution who said, we recognize the injustices of the past and that we must ameliorate this situation by addressing them. Because it is quite important, and for me, this is neither here nor there, that the budget has been cut, that we are understaffed, and this and that and that and that. This is not helpful. Crime is eating up this country. And when you report here, you report about how you're dealing with these soft target crimes. The real crime and the real issues of corruption are not confronted with, and my view, Chair, they need to be confronted. And as I indicated, we don't have time at all. I don't even have time to ask questions because there is no time for that. And I share your proposal, Chair, to say we need in our program to line up this particular department, crunch it, entity by entity, vote by vote, so that we are able, issue by issue, so that we are able to make an indelible contribution in terms of attending to these particular issues. Thank you, Chair.
The question of Evander Magistrate Court, they said it's finished. Chairperson, I'm staying in Embalenke. Yeah, it's not finished. It's almost finished. They must not say it's finished.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Truth sounds like a hate to those who hate the truth. I'm so disappointed by this Department of Justice, Prosecution, Correctional Services, the department that we are supposed to trust, the way they represent their story here before us. I would like to ask the Deputy Minister on the act of corruption and maladministration in the Department of Correctional Services. Deputy Minister, kopa umpulela gore o act jwang ka batho ba ba tshwanang le bo Mukabela, Jeff Mukabela, the commissioner, Baba included the motor bo issue ya busas, o batla gore ba suspendwe ke mang, o batla gore the president anke action ka batho ba e leng gore ba push corruption within the centers. Another question is about some of the people who are going to be here. When I live at the way long about because they were exposing a corruption on what happened in prison, those people, the members of the correctional service. Corruption is a bit of a young girl that go correctional service because you have a shortage of staff. And after that, because they undermine the rule of the court. I put it in order to go away them safety, whenever they cannot go away them safety because by exposing the corruption. Where, and if a member attempting sports of that gun within the end. If we go to hospital and say that person is old to the motor, because I'll find and say, really, I come. Member of correctional service. But never exposed the corruption, but never quello. And the group has suspended. Up until now, some of those people who did our way in the motor arm and service by service, but your department has angle of corrupted them service because they undermine the rule of the court.
Okay.
I still want to, I'm on the issue of corruption. Where they say they are short of the staff. But I'm using my own language,
yes,
so that you can easily understand me.
Okay, now before you continue, I just want to ask the Deputy Minister, did you understand what was said earlier?
I got the gist.
Unfortunately, we haven't arranged for translation services in the session. So I think it is important that if you don't understand what is it said, then we need to just bring you up to speed. Okay. Okay, Mr. Sutton. Okay, thanks.
Okay. To go back to the department, justice and correctional service. And provide disciplinary hearings from 2017, 2018, and 2019. Especially to the members within the centers. Because that department is corrupt. And whatever it is, they will divide the civilians. Because when I got a mention or the civilians of Ukai, for Kata, the lawyer, the MLN department, I have to go to court. I have mentioned anything and to the usual. But all of this department, they just shall take things out of them.
Are you done, Anbuna Sanar?
No, I'm not done. Listen, because Shabella.
Okay.
I also want to ask the National Prosecuting Authority. Where, but very long ago, I mentioned you were more corruption, especially by Mabamo Commissioner Zondo. Little that I am, because Ronaldo, your vision is justice for all. Because I'm not a committee a crime, Uswaragosani, within 14 days, says Anzal Mutin Hal Court. But a committee a crime, maybe I know what they are, the political leaders, will never do to do a one again by two, but prosecute you. Because those people are born about mentioning you, like in there with Jeff Mukabela. He's not been mentioned. As long as I say from the court, but he's been mentioned by a crime. But so that in Bonner Babono or his true justice, it's a famous particular fellow, only just along with the aim, certainly. Okay, and an example we are the political prisoners, as a political prisoner. The PAC, the EFS, and the entire crime forces, they march to the department, as the political prisoners of the PAC, or the former president, they went and said, this is our people who go for one select Shangani. Just to say, the president, Chabon Begu, 2008, when a reverence group, whereby the reverence group in Elwari released all the political prisoners or to deal with the issue of political prisoners.
There's a point of order.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. My problem now, Chair, would be one, is that we are not debating what was presented to us here. If there are any issues, Chair, of that nature, can it be deferred to a relevant area where it can be debated?
because we allowed a presentation and slides and documentation. I think it'd be wise, Chair, that we deal with that for now.
Okay, Mr. Shepherdson. Madam Chair, I think the language I'm using is difficult for an African like I to understand. I was referring to the issue of the NPA when they are talking about the TRC recommendation.
Yes.
So when I'm using the language, because people usually change fast, let me say the president.
I think the point that Honourable Mutetwa is making is that we're not necessarily debating.
I'm not debating. I'm highlighting this.
You may please ask the question.
That is the question that I want to know from there. Thank but you me. Must understand the language that I'm using,
yes.
is an African language.
Yes.
So it's difficult for those who've changed.
We're not stopping you from using the African language.
Okay, but you didn't understand what I'm saying.
You still have to be relevant to the meeting and the process.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm saying, the TRC, on the issue of the TRC, because but there are the people that they are still dealing with their issue. There is an issue in TRC. The president, the former president, Thabo Mbeki, established the reference group to deal with the political prisoners. Those now are still inside the centers. Those who are now being released and with a parole, can they also look on that issue? Because those people, they were on the list of the president to pardon them.
Thank you, Honorable Nathanai.
Okay,
thank you. Honorable Zita.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson, first, I would like this department, let's appreciate the presentation that were done. And also, I would like to know their audit outcome, Chair, because I didn't hear from the presentation the audit outcome of the this financial year. To Chair, I picked up that the department is using a lot of consultants. And for me, it's quite strange, I must say, Chair, because in where I come from in another life, Chair, in municipalities, we are cautioned to use consultants. But it looks like here at the national level, you have a luxury of using consultants to the extent that you know every financial year it gets to be increased. Yet the same department has got serious challenges of short staff. It's their presentation that was saying so. The amount that they use for consultants versus the shortage of staff in the same department. So I would like them to reconcile the two and see if it's not kind of negative to use more consultants than recruiting people with skills that are necessary for the department to be capacitated. Another one, Chair, you know, it's quite scary, Chair, I must say, when they say they have identified that EHOCS has got serious skills problem. Yet it's a unit in lacking of a better word that is supposed to be the most with most skilled personnel because they are dealing with serious cases of crime. So if you have that challenge, when are you planning as a department to deal with this matter? In my view, it's quite scary, Chair. And the other one, Chair, the department is complaining about the budget cuts. But when we listen to their presentation, they are underspending. Again, how do you reconcile the two? For instance, they've identified in 200 million that has not been spent on what you call infrastructure development. Yet, it's an area where the government, in terms of the president's state of the nation, that is supposed to be creating jobs for South Africans. And another Chair, which is the last from me, Chairperson, is on the issue of these budget cuts that they are complaining about and the whole issue of budget of the department. This one, it may not be something that they can respond to it now, because one of the members has said they must detail for us the staff shortage that they are experiencing in the department. So that as these members of the committee, as much as we criticize some of the things that they are doing, but at least as NCOP, one of our responsibilities is to help the department and to make sure that we fight for the things that are justified for them to be addressed. So if their information can be packaged in a way that we are able, us as a committee, to talk to the Department of Treasury to deal with their challenges. So you need to justify your case by knowing their budget, their spending, their audit outcome, and their shortage of skills in terms of those that they have identified that they have a problem. So that's my input, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Modise.
Okay. No, thanks, Honorable Chairperson, and good afternoon. I think most of the questions I'm covered, but I want to raise my concern because we are dealing here today. We are supposed to come and receive the issue of budget. How are we dealing with the budget, whereas the CFO is not here? Is it possible, Deputy Minister, for you to come here without a CFO, and knowing that the CFO, she's the one, or he's the one who's dealing with the money, she will be in the position to tell us which, how did she move, or he move 5 rand from 10 rand to, and so on and so on. But and we have never received any apology of that. It's a serious concern. But again, Chair, the issue that was raised by Honorable Dodofu, I'm from Northwest, by the way, they must be taken to consideration serious, because really the community, they are not, they don't have trust on us. So can you, the department deal with that issue? And then, oh, let me congratulate the Advocate Batoi and Advocate Koronje for being appointed in this position. Then I want to ask Advocate Batoi, tell me, what is your plan? How are we going to deal with the issues, the mess that was created by your predecessor? Because remember, there are advocates, about 5 or 4, I don't know how many are they, those who were appointed illegally by your predecessor, whereas he was not longer being in the office. What is your plan about that? And then Advocate Batoi, again, just tell me, what is happening in Mafikeng office? Because there is Advocate Niponi, there is someone who's 18, whereas there is a director or is director in the office. And what is the criteria that you did you use to appoint a person who's 18? Because in my knowledge or whatever that I know, there are 2 experienced advocates there in that office. Some of them, they have even more than 20 years being a deputy director in that office. Some 18, but you decided to appoint someone who's junior to them. So tell us the criteria that you use. Are you not causing the instability of leadership in that OCC, whereas there is a crisis in your department again? The issue of budget, and then again, for congratulating the NPA to have the
its own vote, because all along they've been depending from other votes for other directorates. So I think they will be able to do their job as they're supposed to do. And thank you. I'm covered most of the questions.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. One, let me preface my comment with a congratulatory message to all those who are newly appointed. And of course, just to say, if they do the right thing, they have all our support. We will support them, because we want to build and rebuild the image of our government. I'm a bit worried, Chair, without echoing what the people spoke before me, particularly Honorable Totovu. Without echoing what he has said, but I've got a serious concern. The department is complaining about budget cuts and so on and so forth. They complain about short staffing, which affects the efficiency of the department. But in the same breath, there's an underspending on personnel expenditure. Huge amount of money. And then they come and complain about the shortage of staff. It doesn't make sense to me. And I hope and trust that that particular matter will be resolved. Because if they were overspending on personnel, then we would understand when they say they don't have personnel. But if you underspend on personnel expenditure, then obviously there is a problem. To spend 47% of your budget on lease, on rentals, when there are state-owned, unused government buildings. There are unused government buildings everywhere. Some of them are even dilapidated now. People have decided to expropriate those buildings because they are unused. But we continue to lease. It doesn't make sense. So there should be something that the department does, together with all the two institutions, the NPA and the SIU. And you also speak about, you say I'm having a problem. It's a matter that I've always raised with the Department of Health in my previous life, where they go around building clinics, beautiful buildings, nice looking buildings, but inside there's no panado, there's no penicillin, there's nothing. We're building beautiful magistrate court in villages and so on and so forth, but we don't staff them. It becomes a problem because they become white elephants. They're not useful for our communities. What is the plan of making sure that those courts are efficient? In fact, has the department at any given time sat down and looked at the optimum utilization of the current courts? Because if you can go to any local court, just go and sit there to listen to cases there. You get there, you get 20 cases postponed, one case heard and postponed. So it also is a problem. it also it's a problem in itself. What is the monitoring mechanism to ensure that courts are optimally utilized and magistrates don't go there, particularly on Mondays and Fridays? Your magistrates will even knock off at lunchtime on Friday. Many magistrates on Monday, just postponement of cases. I'm not going to say what is the reason for many of them. But the other aspect is this thing of the usage of consultants. Because from where I am sitting, I see these departments as highly specialized departments.
Okay, yes. Can I request that we don't repeat some of the questions that have already been asked? I shouldn't be saying this, but we do have a time constraint.
Okay. Yeah, I view the department as a highly specialized department. So let's not ask them why they are using consultants, but we must ask them to minimize and ultimately stop the usage of consultants and have their services used in internally. And the other issue that doesn't make sense is for the MPA to want to have their own investigating directorate, when we have a special investigating unit, which we would have thought that the special investigating unit would investigate cases and refer those cases for prosecution to the MPA. Unless we are told here that these different institutions of government are working differently from each other, so we have federalized our own institutions. Because we would have thought that the SIU does the investigation of all high-level and serious crimes, and then upon their findings, like the issue that we were talking about, the enforcement or the difficulty of the enforcement of their findings, we will be able to ensure that they are able to refer those cases to the National Prosecuting Authority so that they follow their name, they prosecute and not investigate. Because if there's a matter that they want investigated, there's an investigating unit. So I think that's what we also need to be looking at in order to save ourselves. But finally, Chair, it would have been ideal, and I hope in the next meeting that is what is going to happen. Because at times we fight with our own officials here in Parliament. When they send us emails, they say these are the documents for that meeting. And when you start reading those documents, you are on page 2. There's another email that comes in. No, that's a wrong batch. Here's the final batch. When you still familiarize yourself with the final batch, say, no, that final batch, in fact, here's a corrected version. It should not happen again. When you dispatch information, you must know, and you must be certain that that's the information that you want out. We don't really have time, and the luxury of time, to read and reread documents because they are recent as amended versions of documents. So that's another thing that we must also raise, Chair, with the department, that in future, if you give us the documents. Don't give us the documents for compliance. Let's comply. They wanted the documents on Friday. Let's comply. When you know that the correct document is going to come on Tuesday. So that's what I wanted to raise. And please, the ministers. The minister, we would love to have interactions with the minister and the deputies in one, under one roof, so that some of the information does not go as second-hand information to them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable C. Klep.
C. Lek. They call in Afrikaans so lekker.
How is it?
No, basically I want to let Umengwe when she said in terms of the audit outcomes. I believe that the department for two consecutive years had received a qualified opinion with findings. And when I look in terms of the slide that was done in terms of the budget, it was not even mentioned as the challenges in the department that need to be addressed in the financial year. And I think that's where we start in terms of financial discipline. Because you cannot expect to get more, but you can't even manage the little that you have. That's where the crux of the matter is. We need to start there. And also, how are they going to move from, you know, to unqualified in eventually getting to a clean audit, which is work in progress, I believe. And also, the impact of the work of the commission on the department, I don't know how it's out, because in the country, we have so many commissions. And we understand that it will come with recommendations, it will come with referrals, it will come with actions. And how is the department going to cope? Because I'm worried that I sit here that we are going to have competent drivers, that we are going to buy them city golfs, you know, of 1988, chasing GTIs. Because if you drive that golf of 1988 chasing that GTI, you are not going to survive. You're going to miss it. And that's where we need to capacitate this department, make sure that this one that they're being drawn, you know, because everybody's talking about corruption, but there's no proper action in terms. This is one example that we have actually dealt with a person that has been corrupt. And that is the issue that we need to correct. Also, in terms of the SIU, I would have loved to see in terms of the previous financial year, in terms of referrals, how many cases have been referred, what is the success rate, and then if it's not that much in terms of our expectations, then also we have loved to understand the reasons as to why people are not dealing with referrals, and what actions have been taken, and who monitors that, and how are we going to correct it, because it's no use that we do work, but the end result is not seen at all. And also one factor also in terms of the maintenance sector, I believe that there's a lot of vacancies actually that has not been filled or it's undercapacitated. And I would have loved to see how the department is basically going to deal with that to make sure that these papas, you know, that are supposed to pay, you know, they are able to pay and they are, you know, they have been followed, because it affects the mother that is raising a child, you know, who's supposed to get what she was supposed to get and is not getting it. And we cannot be seen as a state that is reluctant, you know, to assist that kind of mother who's raising a child, you know, on its own. I think for now, due to time constraint, I will speak about the last one. The potential of overspending in terms of compensation. I would also have loved to, maybe if they would elaborate more on it, you know, because it's already standing at 8%, it gives me like it's going to grow. And what is the reason that, you know, that leads to that, and what measures are in place to make sure that it does not grow and that it's managed? And I think those are the few contributions I would like to make to this session. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, honorable members. I think from my side, you have covered most of my issues. However, I'm just thinking for us to take this process forward, because clearly in terms of the SIU and the NPA, we didn't give them or expect them to present their APP and budget yet. Some of the questions require certain specifics which you might not have on you as we speak. There are other issues that relate to policy matters which I'm of the view that both the SIU, as it affects the SIU and MPA, that we should probably keep them on hold. I know Honorable Dodogo made observations. Unfortunately, the observations came across as questions. So there's been a number of observations that have been made in terms of the budgets, the operations of the SIU, the MPA, There are other details that the committee is expecting, which I'm sure if you had presented your APPN budget, would have probably clarified some issues. I'm going to suggest to the committee that, as per my suggestion earlier, and Honorable Zido, who kind of seconded that, that we allow the SIU and NPA to come back to us on another day to make full presentations in terms of their APP and budget, as well as address some of the policy issues that have been raised in the session today. Coming back then to the department, Deputy Minister, I think from the side of the department's APP and budget, maybe I'll give you about 10 minutes to respond to some of the issues. They were largely around efficiency, budgets, how the department's actually going to turn around. But clearly, it's the understanding and the fact that the department also has a qualification and not turning that around that needs some kind of attention. I think on the policy side from the department, maybe you could cover that side as well a bit. But I think some of the issues raised, you did also respond in terms of your first presentation, where members were a bit uncomfortable because they didn't have the document and. Anyway, but if I can maybe give you 10 minutes to respond to the plethora of issues around budget, and then advocates, I'm sorry to repress you, but I just think it's worth the understanding that we haven't given you the opportunity, but we will do that. Okay, thanks.
Chair, thanks, and the DG will follow on from me, and the DG is the accounting officer in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. So he's actually responsible for the money. Just to say that, look, there's been some quite harsh criticisms, maybe also put on record as Deputy Minister that we do not find the way that the matter was handled in terms of the time allocated satisfactory either. We were also, the Minister was sent a letter specifying specific areas that the committee wanted responded to, what a response to. And we gave that response. So I understand that, yes, this is a new committee, new parliament, but it works both ways is what I'm trying to say. And let's all, I think, try and make the best of what we've got. But we were asked on to explain on certain issues, and we came and we did that. And the time has not really been sufficient. As I said, the Department of Justice with the Minister and the DG had a full day in the National Assembly, starting, I think, at 9. Obviously, we couldn't start earlier because of other things. But look, just maybe to highlight some of the points. So just to the members that are being so critical of the presentation, where it needs to be taken in the context of what we were asked for. But hopefully there will be further engagement when there's less pressure. Usually the budget process takes longer, but because this is an election year. Just maybe to highlight, I mean, the DG will respond on some of the issues, but the consultant issue, which has been of concern to a number of people, as we'd specified, those consultants are for the commissions, not for the departments, most of them. So we don't have control over them, and obviously the commissions are going to employ consultants because they're short-term. They're not going to permanently employ people. I think the underspending, the DG can give more detail, but for example, Department of Public Works is the agent for the Department of Justice. So if they suddenly say, well, we can't spend all the money, we don't have capacity, that's something more broadly that government has to look at. On the issue of political prisoners, look, I mean, that's not a issue for as part of the budget, but Honorable Dadovu raised it. As you know, or should know, the process was the TRC, and that there was agreement between the parties and then Parliament in passing the legislation that the Amnesty Committee of the TRC would decide on which cases were political, and there was a set of criteria. People applied there, some people got amnesty, some people didn't.
My understanding is and Honourable Master Mike can correct me, is that he applied and didn't get amnesty. Then, as Honourable Motsumai says, there was a process under President Mbeki of a special dispensation but it specifically excluded people who'd applied to the TRC and been refused amnesty. It was slightly longer in terms of its time span. It went up to 1999. The TRC was only up until 1994. That process then was beset by a lot of litigation, a number of cases going all the way up to the Constitutional Court defining what was actually needed, what was expected. But the matter is currently with the President to consider the application or the recommendations of the reference group. But I think it's something I would really urge that we have a broader debate on. I think also then on to Honourable Kotia, on just, I know that the Chair said the NPA shouldn't speak, but, and why they can't speak, why does the NPA want its own investigating directorate? Well, they didn't. The President appointed it. Okay, so it's a decision of the President in terms of the National Prosecuting Authority Act. And the difference with the SIU, and again I think it will be good for them to come back, is that the SIU Special Investigation Unit is effectively a civil unit looking at civil recovery of matters that were stolen. So this investigating directorate would be working primarily with the hawks within the police. Obviously the relations with the SIU needs to be fleshed out more so that there can be maximum usage. But I think, and then also Honourable Toya, and to other members, give us these examples of the courts which you think are not being utilised properly. And then, sorry, also to Honourable Motsumai, with the concerns on corrections, I'm not the Deputy Minister of Corrections, so I can't answer those. I did ask the committee secretary, who I think will confirm, is corrections going to be covered here, because do we need to bring the Deputy Minister of Corrections? And was told, no, it won't be covered. So I apologize for that, but for not being able to respond to your issues. But I think, again, there were communication misunderstandings, I think, then, if you can put it that way, in terms of what was going to be covered. If I can quickly give to the DG.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chairperson. I will deal with some of the questions that have been raised, and I hope I can do so quickly within the time that was given to us. The first question that I wish to deal with is the one regarding the audit opinion. That yes, we did get qualified audit opinions, but we believe that we've worked hard to improve that. The jury is still out on that because the audit process is still being finalized. We will know once that audit process is completed whether or not there's been any improvement resulting from the measures that we've put in place to improve our audit outcome. With regard to the CFO not being here, when we received the letter, Madam Chair, which specified the matter that the committee wished to be addressed on, we didn't get the impression that there will need to be an extensive engagement on the budget issues. But certainly that was a mistake.
Can I just verify something so that even as a committee we're not necessarily misquoted? Because I think it was very clear that we needed a presentation in your budget and agency, but we said over and above that there are other issues that we wanted the department to present to the committee. So it wasn't like we wanted you to just focus on other things. In essence, this meeting was about the APP and budget. But your APP is also informed by other policy directives, and those are the directives that we expect the department to give us more information about. So it wasn't a meeting outside of the framework of a budget. But be that as it may, I think we are where we are. Let us not, I don't want to point fingers. I just want us to dispense with matters, to agree that indeed we could have done things better. But for now, I wanted to clarify this matter so that our letter to the department is not read just in one light and the rest of it is thrown out. Thanks.
Sorry, Madam Chair. I hope that I'm not understood to be pointing fingers at the committee. All I was trying to explain is the circumstances under which the non-attendance of the CFO came about. I'm not by any means suggesting that the committee is to be blamed for it. I think we do take the blame for that, and it's certainly a matter that we'll need to correct in our future engagements. I've got other colleagues here who may wish to field specific questions relating to their areas. The Chief Director of Strategy would like to field some of them.
Thanks, Chair. On the issue that was raised on the budget slides, there was an issue that slides in 19 to 20 were not clear, but I think the areas that need to be clarified is perhaps the three-letter acronyms there, because the content of this is already indicated. So where we talk about COE, I think it's slide number 19, so it's not labeled there, is the growth in compensation of employees. It shows that in specific terms, how did the compensation grow? That's where the COE comes in. And then on the next one, it talks about the growth in goods and services, GNS. So the increase and decrease is based on what was spent in a year. And I've indicated, okay, then go to the next one. We talk about capital assets versus spending that goes with us and DPW. But starting with this one, the spending on capital assets has decreased, particularly last year, because our relationship with IDT, our implementing agent, ran out. We were told that we must rather work with DPW directly and not with IDT now. That is why we are starting to have spending issues again with DPW. So that's where the spending does. But on compensation of employees, the big driver of our increase there is we have a lot of staff who are on OSD. OSD is occupation specific dispensation. Now that dispensation is in our department is for lawyers, and the negotiation for their salary increases is not the same as the one for senior management services. Now, where senior management services would be getting, say, a 2 or 3 or 4% increase, we find that the OSD increase year on year for their salaries is about 6, 7, 8%. So that drives our compensation of employees costs high. So I wanted to clarify on that issue. And then on there was a question asked on court administration staff. Then when we say delays due to court administration staff, what are we talking about? We're talking specifically about interpreters and court recording staff. When there's the delays, usually those are the two areas, and the target relates to those two. Then litigation targets, why are they so low? Within the family advocate space, they actually bring parties together. So it means when it's a divorce matter, for example, both parties must come in the interest of the children, and so it's not easy. And we could set a target for family advocate to say, just organize the meetings, but we said, no, they must go beyond that. They must really push for completion of agreements. And we know that we can't set a 100% target because there are issues of conflict and litigation, and we take into account. So all the targets that we set, in fact, in the APP, take into account all the context that goes with that work, and the family advocate is one of those. Then on the issue of Evander Magistrate Court, it's indicated on that slide there that Evander is on the target for 1920, so we are busy with it at the moment, but it's not indicated as one that's done. It's indicated on the 1920 column to show that it's one that we are busy with. Then the money spent on legal services, it was asked how much money is really spent on legal services. It's indicated in the slide. Let me quickly see if I can go to that slide.
slide number 35 that shows the amount of money that we spent. I think in 2017-18 we have 1.8 billion and in 2018-19 we have 1.82 billion in 2017-18 and 1.83 billion in 2018-19, and we do spend the debt money defending the state. It is true that we do, and we disclose that information. Yeah, I think I'll stop there. Thank you. Oh, yes, just the other one on the use of leased buildings. We need to work with DPW on that, and like the DM has already indicated, this is one area where we can work better with them. Because when we request assistance with office space, etc., we work through them. So this is one part that we will work with DPW. Thank you.
Thank you. Advocate, I'm not done.
That's just perhaps there is one that I think is imperative to deal with, is the under expenditure on compensation of employees. What tends to happen, as we already know now, that we are projecting a further budget cut on our compensation of employees next year. The impact of that is that even when we have vacancies, you are not able to fill them because the carry through costs of the filling of those posts would not be catered for in the new year because we have to cut your budget. Since 2016, we've not been able to fill a lot of the posts because many of them have been frozen. So you get allocated money this year, but you know that you're not going to have all of that money next year. It would be irresponsible in terms of the Public Finance Management Act to employ people now on a permanent basis when you know that in the new year, you won't have money to pay them because the Treasury has already told you that you need to bring that back. So it really results in a lot of uncertainty as to how quickly we can move to fill our post. Yes.
Yeah, I see some of the members nodding heads here. But essentially, Deputy Minister, clearly your budget process is done in consultation with National Treasury. And if there are any cuts to any process, it's also done in consultation. And the expectation, or basic expectation, would be that you would be able to give an indication if there are budget cuts, what is the actual impact on service delivery. And I mean, that is the type of information that should come even to us as committees of Parliament, so that even for us to be able to relook at budgets and even to try and justify that this department is clearly in a crisis in terms of funding and to make certain suggestions. The unfortunate thing is that the type of presentation we get doesn't give us the sense. I mean, it's just a whole lot of words about the department not having money, and yet you hear. and we still don't have an idea in terms of what type of impact does this actually have in terms of service delivery? I don't think we're gonna get to the bottom of this thing today. And I also don't think that this is gonna be the final engagement we're going to have on this matter. But I just wanted to know from both Advocate Batoi and whether you wanted to just make a comment or not, or were you happy with the process that we will engage you at a later stage? Yeah, okay, but thank you for that. Deputy Minister?
There is a slide, I mean, that was presented to the National Assembly Portfolio Committee on the impact of the budget cuts, which I think is in the documentation, but because of time, it wasn't possible to go through. So I really do need to indicate, I accept you have very little time to process the budget because of it's a shorter time with the elections, but it really put us in a difficult situation. But what you are asking for is there. Yeah.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Onwards, so yeah, did you still want to say something, or can I
accept? Yes, Chair, I need to say something.
Okay.
I think the response that we're getting from the department, particularly with regards to the reduction of personnel, is not satisfactory. And we need to engage further on that particular matter, because the response that we're getting is simply telling us that every year that department is going to cut with personnel because Minister Mboweni has told them that he's going to cut their budget, which means at the end of the day we will sit without magistrates, we'll sit without critical posts in there. So they can't just sit and justify that thing in that way. We need to take that debate further. Thanks.
Okay, I think you're just reiterating something similar to what I said earlier. So I think Deputy Minister, you will take note of some of these matters. And like I said, it's not like we're not going to engage further on this issue. I think when we do engage the NPA and the SIU, we will also, to some extent, make time for the department as well.
Can you be referred to Deputy Minister on that slide so that we can consider it on our own?
Therefore, it was part of the budget figures one, if you remember, and it was about four slides at the end.
Okay, thank you, Deputy Minister. But
Sorry, what we can do is re-email those four slides so that members can, we can send it to the committee secretary just because of time. It's coming up there now, I think, but it's going to be too big. But anyway, we can send those slides, but they should be in the pack.
No, but anyway, thanks, Deputy Minister, and your team for the presentations, even though there's been criticism around it and even around the process. But we'd like to thank you because I think if anything that it has done is given us a view of the justice system, the type of problems and challenges that you encounter. We have no doubt that as a team you want to take this process forward, and I think you'll have our support, you know, if there are any issues that need the attention of the committee. But I think the important part is, I know as all members in this house, we have reached a point where we have a better idea, you know, in terms of what the Department of Justice is actually doing. And I think with the NPA and SIU, you have your work cut out for you, and as dire as it sounds, I think the energy that we sense from you, we have trust and faith that you will take some of this process forward. But we're looking forward to that engagement on your APP and your budget as we go forward. And yeah, once again, thank you. And yeah, we'll meet again. This meeting is closed.
Honourable members, just for clarity, we are moving to V454 for just a short briefing with the Parliamentary Legal Advisor on the NPA matter.
Okay, Honourable members, I'm sorry, I forgot to announce this, but as you're aware that we have to engage legal services on the NPA matter, so we are having a meeting with the committee in the National Assembly, so we can be on the Thank you.